right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. We'll do that a little bit later on. It's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And Dan Feinberg is going to join us. He's TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV, and he's going to join us for a special visit to talk about his choices for the best TV shows of 2018. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He'll be joining us a little bit later on. Coming up in just a few minutes here, our good friend Rick Geezer is going to join us. It is time for the Holiday Sports Song Edition. We do it every year, and We have all of the sports songs that are holiday related. And of course, we will officially kick off the holiday season into the Christmas time with Johnny Bauer's Honky the Christmas Goose. It is a an annual tradition on this show to play the greatest Christmas song ever, Honky the Christmas Goose. And we will end Rick's visit with the full song a little bit later on. And then we got a ton of really fun holiday-related sports songs. Rick Geezer, you can check out sportsongs.com. He's had this collection forever, and he collects songs that were performed by athletes or coaches, anybody in the sports world, and it's really a lot of fun. And every December we have him in to do the holiday Christmas version of sports songs. So that's coming up right here on WGN. You can call us up at 312-981-7200 for talk and text and Triple Play Thursday requests. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. But the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And you should subscribe to our podcasts. We have a ton of people who listen via podcasts, and we thank you for that. I know a lot of people can't stay up, you know, every morning between 1 and 5 a.m. So the second best way to listen to the show is your podcast. And you can subscribe. It's free. Go to iTunes or where you get your podcasts. Find the Nick D Show. Subscribe. It'll automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's what's happening here on the show on this Thursday morning. And we're also going to, you know, because tomorrow we have a lot of fun tomorrow. It's our final show of the year, our final show before our Christmas break. So we're going to bring Esmeralda Leon here, and she's going to spend the last 3 hours of the show with us. The first hour of the show, Jeff Tuckman is going to be here for his monthly visit. We'll answer any and all of your DVD and movie-related questions, and especially if you can't think of the title of a movie and it's making you crazy. And we're giving away an incredible Three Stooges package tomorrow morning. So, and then we're just going to have some holiday fun, having Esmeralda in here, and you know, and we'll have a good time as our last show before the holidays. So, this morning, though, after Dan Feinberg joins us, we're going to open up the phone lines and the text lines, and we're going to do our annual talk about your favorite Christmas movies, your favorite holiday movies, the weirdest, the best, the ones that you watch traditionally. We'll get into the holiday Christmas movies. That's later on. All right. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagrew. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm good. Before I go to Vic, I want to say something about a listener. We talked about Deanna, who is a faithful listener, who goes to my film club events, my screenings all the time. She is an unbelievably generous person. Yesterday, I mentioned that she got me a gritty bobblehead. Well, there was this gigantic box that was sitting, you know, in the hallway here at GN, and I didn't think it was for me. I didn't even bother to look at the label. And then yesterday, as we were leaving, you said, you know, that's addressed to you. And inside that giant box, it was from Deanna, our listener, and inside that giant box was an incredible amount of gifts from, you know, she got you some stuff, she got mm-hmm. Vic some stuff, she got Esmeralda some stuff, which I will present to her tomorrow when she's here. She got some stuff for my folks, which I'm going to give to them, and she got me a bunch of crazy stuff, including a Blackhawks blanket. She got me an original script signed, authenticated from one of my favorite episodes of Sanford and Son, like an original script dated 1972. I don't know. And she got me a sign. She had a sign made for my favorite word, which I can't say on the air. You know that show that Ron Santo liked?
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Bell was on?
Mm-hmm.
You know that show?
Mm-hmm.
That show Jag?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know the opposite of on?
Mm-hmm.
Put those two words together, and she got a sign made like that, and I just hung it on my office door. It's because it's, you know, That's it sums me up. And then a bunch of candy and a bunch of other really incredible stuff. And she's very kind and you know, listens to the show all the time. Says that, you know, she's, you know, she has some, you know, some rough times, you know, and we help her through that. And as a way of thanking us, she sends us all this stuff. Incredibly generous from Deanna. And I want to thank her, like, yes, really from the bottom of my heart. You are unbelievably generous, and it was very sweet of you to do that, and sweet of you to get some stuff for my folks and for Esmeralda and for Vic and Dan and everything. And listen, I'm just glad that you listen, and I'm glad that you like the show and that it helps you get through the night sometimes. That's my job. And Merry Christmas, and thank you. You said Merry Christmas, best wishes for an incredible 2019, and right back at you, Deanna. Thank you very, very, very much. So I just wanted to give a shout-out to her before we get going here. Let's go to the newsroom, and it's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
How are you?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
All right. And,
yeah, I hope I get to see Deanna. Maybe she'll be at your screening Saturday and thank her in person. That was so kind.
Are you coming on Saturday?
I am, yeah. Oh. You know, I meant to buy my tickets when you mentioned it. I think it was the day before yesterday, and the website wasn't working, so I have to go back
there. Yeah, there were some issues with it until they fixed it Tuesday afternoon.
Okay, yeah, so I'm going. I've already invited Jeannie. She's gave the thumbs up. We'll be there.
Okay, great. Well, for what he's referring to is I'm doing a special film club edition on Saturday of Robert Zemeckis' new movie. If you were listening to Patty's show earlier, she reran our interview with Robert Zemeckis, which we ran yesterday morning. The new movie is called Welcome to Marwen with Steve Carell. I absolutely loved it, and so did Patty. And so Mike Kurz, who helped me out with my film club, said, hey, listen, would you like to host a screening of Welcome to Marwen at the Rosemont 18, AMC Rosemont 18? And I said, sure. So I'm hosting the 7:10 screening. I'll introduce the movie, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. So it's going to be like a special Saturday night edition of the Nick DiGilio Film Club, with a movie that's actually out in the theaters, a brand new movie. So it's the 7:10 screening at AMC Rosemont 18. You make your reservations there, and we're going to have a great time watching Robert Zemeckis' new movie. And it is a great film, and I'm really looking forward to it. And this is the first time we've ever done like a first run movie on like a Saturday night, and we're pretty excited about it. And I hope hope a lot of people come out. And Vic, I'm glad you're coming, man. That's going
to
be great.
I don't normally get to go to these during the week, so I'm excited. Very excited.
Yeah, and then we were just, you know, as soon as like Mike was like, well, look, I know how much you like Robert Zemeckis, how much you love him, and he said, I'm assuming you liked the new movie, and I'm like, yeah, a little. So he set this whole thing up because Mike's a manager over at the AMC Rosemont 18, and that's one of the reasons why we do our film club from there. And so we're doing the special Saturday edition with Welcome to Marwen, the new Robert Zemeckis movie. Tickets are on sale right now. You can go to amctheaters.com. It's the 7:10 showing of Welcome to Marwen. So get your tickets now. We'll see you there. Patty's going to be there, too. Now Vic is going to be there, so we're going to have a good time. Vic, I'm excited that you're going to come out, man.
It's going to be great.
Cool. All right. Well, there you go. That's what's happening here. And again, a little bit later on, Dan Feinberg is going to join us to talk about the best of TV. And that's all coming up. And after the break here, we're going to be joined by Rick Geezer, who is in the PPG Paints green room. That's right. Green room, right?
Yep, green room.
It's in the PPG Paints green room. Our good friend Rick Geezer, he's going to join us live in studio for our annual Christmas edition of Sports Songs. And some of this stuff is so great. And, of course, everybody, just be prepared because, yes, Christmas will officially kick off when we play Honky the Christmas Goose, the greatest Christmas song of all time. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with Rick Geezer and Sports Songs right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It is a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday later on. Get your request in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg is going to join us from The Hollywood Reporter to talk about his favorite TV shows of 2018. And what you just heard there was Stan Musial performing Silent Night, and that is from the collection of Christmas and holiday sports songs that belong to Rick Geezer. Rick Geezer has a Facebook page for Sports Songs. You can check out sportssongs.com. They have podcast episodes available at WGNRadio.com. And we do this annually. And let's welcome Rick for our special holiday version of Sports Songs. Welcome back, Rick.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays to you.
Thank you for welcoming back, Nick.
Of course, of course. It's, you know, this is always a, this is now it's become this, you know, a annual tradition now to have you on.
Yes.
Usually during the last week that I'm on of the year. And then to me, this is the episode of the show that we do where it is officially Christmas time.
It definitely is. Definitely is.
And this segment will climax, not this segment, but the whole visit that you have will climax, of course, with the playing of the great Honky the Christmas Goose.
By legendary hockey Hall of Famer Johnny Bauer.
Exactly. Well, give everybody just a little background on Sports Songs.
Sports Songs are any songs performed by an athlete, coach, player, executive involved in the world of sports. They can be professionals, they can be college. In some cases, they're amateurs or Olympians. Mm-hmm. You know, are they amateurs? I don't know.
Well, they might be amateurs as singers.
Exactly.
But, so
we'll play a lot of these songs, and I'll gather them. They're either on vinyl or digital or CDs.
Cassettes. Everything.
Videos. You name it. I've got it.
Yeah. And you're always looking for stuff, too.
I am. I found a few things. I haven't found anything really new, though, this year.
For the holidays. Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, we love all of the stuff that you bring in. And then again, we're going to hear Honky the Christmas Goose, which officially kicks off Christmas for me. So, all right.
Shopping season is over. Honky has been played.
So, wherever you want to start, tell me where.
Okay. Why don't we start with one of my favorite Christmas singers, and that's Terry Bradshaw. We love him on, the NBA, the NFL coverage.
Right.
Let's go with track three. In 1996, he put out a CD called Terry Bradshaw Sings Christmas Songs for the Whole Family. And this is so hard to get, this CD. The only one I've saw on eBay this season so far is running in the $200 to $300 range at this point.
Really?
Exactly. I mean, I love Christmas songs. I love sports songs. I don't love it at that price,
though. Wow. $200 to $300 for a Terry Bradshaw Christmas CD.
Right.
Wow.
So this is his version of Jolly Old Saint Nick.
All right. Terry Bradshaw, everybody.
Jolly old Saint Nicholas, lean your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm going to say. Christmas Eve is coming soon now, you dear old man. Whisper what you bring to me, tell me if you can. When the clock is striking 12, when I'm fast asleep, down the chimney broad and black, with your pack you'll creep. And the stockings you will find hanging in a row. Mine will be the shortest one, you'll be sure to know. Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a sled, Dorothy wants a picture book, yellow, blue, and red.
Yeah.
Now I think I'll leave to you what to...
That's a classic.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer.
Cut him some slack.
And he also, you know, had a pretty successful music career.
He had a successful country and gospel career in the 70s into the 80s, yes.
Yeah. Well, he's a legend. Terry Bradshaw, nice way to kick off the old holiday sports song edition. All right, where do we go next?
Well, here's a new one I found. It's track 310, and it's Clint Capella from the Houston Rockets. And I talked about how I have songs that are on albums or CDs, but so many people now are releasing videos to YouTube and to other services or to their websites. And he does something called a cappella with Capella. And there were he sings
his last name is Capella. Yeah.
And he sings songs poorly, and his teammates comment on them. And this is a song. It's a winter song, and we'll hear another version of this song a little later.
Yeah.
It's Let It Go from Frozen.
Okay. Everybody who has kids knows this damn song by heart.
Yes. Exactly.
So, all right. So this is Clint Capela from the Houston Rockets.
At 3:10.
Yeah. All right. Here we go.
It's heartwarming, actually, now. I like it.
Man, Clint, killing my ears, man.
How does he know all the words to this song, though?
Let it go, let it go. I'm the one with the wildest sky. Let it go,
let it go.
That's drunk karaoke.
So I would know the lyrics.
This is from Frozen. Let it go, Frozen.
Let it go.
Man, that's hilarious. That is hilarious.
So he puts out various songs.
Does he just put them out online? Or?
He puts them out online, and they carry him. They carry him on the Rockets website.
Oh,
and,
sure, yeah. I would imagine maybe they play him during intermission. Yeah,
they would imagine.
Like
I've noticed them on their website, yeah. But I would imagine
that's
they're
funny.
Short enough.
Yeah. That is funny. That's really funny. A cappella with Capela. But that wasn't a cappella. Does he know what a cappella means?
Well, I don't know if he does.
All right, that was great. All right, what's next?
276. It's a newer song. It's from 2014. It's the two-time Masters winner, Bubba Watson. He rapped a song about Christmas and Christmas gifts called Bubba Claus, and he was part of a parody golf boy band called the Golf Boys, which put out a song in like around 2010 that was a we've played it here before,
yeah.
But it's been a while.
Okay,
and it's crazy, and the song's pretty insane.
Bubba Claus.
Bubba Claus.
All right, here we go.
I just touched down on my hovercraft. I bet you wanna know what's in my bag. Is it golf clubs or a bag of toys? I remember Christmas growing up in Baghdad. Chilling in the living room with my dad. Mama in the kitchen got food in the stove. Sister in the living room playing on the floor. I used to hit the golf course, take me a swing. Got my first club since boy was a teen. Kids in their room, they can't even go to sleep. Cause they know I'm coming through putting gifts on the tree. No sleigh, no beard, no rain.
That's pretty special.
That's
something.
You're not going to win. You're not going to wear a green jacket for that.
No, that's Bubba Claus. All right. Rick, hang on, okay?
All right.
We got to take a break for the news and then more holiday-themed sports songs right after this. Everybody, Merry Christmas. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. The opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Triple Play Thursday will be coming up later on. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, will stop by for his biweekly visit, and he's going to talk about the best shows of 2018, TV shows, and he'll be with us a little bit later. Right now, though, Rick Geezer is with us, and it's our annual holiday Christmas Sports Songs Edition. Rick, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Tell everybody who that was.
That was former Major League pitcher, San Diego Padre pitcher, Eric Schau.
Mm.
He recorded that in 1988, and it wasn't released until 2004.
All right, there you go. And that's some of the instrumental stuff that we've been listening to when we come back from breaks and news and stuff like that. Holiday Sports Songs Edition. Rick, you join us every year for that. And I also want to mention that you'll be sitting in this weekend for Dave Plyer.
I will be filling in.
Yeah.
So hopefully you guys will listen. And we've got a lot of fun lined up.
It's 2 to 5 a.m.
2 to 5 a.m. You know better than I do. You have any tips for me how to deal with this interesting audience?
Well, you know, it's an audience that I worked with for several years.
Exactly.
I had the Saturday night / Sunday morning overnights for many years. They're a good audience. Listen,
they're a loyal audience.
That's absolutely true. The overnight people, the people who listen to me every morning are very loyal. Insanely loyal, and I love them for it. So the overnight folks are great, and so they'll be supportive, and they'll have some fun.
So should I be reading the text messages as I move along?
Well, here's the thing: I don't do that. I mean, we read text messages, you know, that listeners send in, but I don't have the text message board up on my screen. Dan usually goes through them, and the ones that I can read on the air, I'll read on the air. But, you know, there's always jerks out there who are, you know, typing and texting negative stuff.
Right.
And I tend to want to stay away from that while I'm on the air. You know, I'm trying to be happy and do a good show for everybody. I don't need negativity. So I never look at the text board, ever. Because there's a lot of idiots out there who...
Exactly. Well, I'm going to try to bring some positivity, have some fun.
Exactly.
Share some information. I've got a few interesting guests to come up.
Well, there you go.
And hopefully people will listen. I might even play a couple songs.
All right. Sunday morning, December 23rd from 2 to 5 a.m., Rick Geezer will be filling in for Dave Plyer. All right. Let's get back to the holiday sports songs. Rick, where do you want to go
next? Let's go to track 22. In 1979, the New York Islanders were one of the hottest things in the NHL. They won back-to-back Stanley Cups, and they had Hall of Famers or future Hall of Famers galore on the team. So what's next? Let's put out a holiday album. And they did, called Home for the Holidays. And this is their version of We Wish You a Merry Christmas.
1979 New York Islanders. It's got that disco feel to it.
1979. And I saw you post something on social media today about how the song Day by Day from has, what, 22 words?
22 words.
I think we heard about 15
words.
Yeah,
I think that's about it. They said we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year about 900 times in a row. That era of the Islanders, my God, led by, in my opinion, one of the greatest hockey players, Mike Bossy, one of the greatest hockey players that ever lived.
Coach Al Arbor, Dennis Potvin, Brian Trottier.
Incredible team. Yeah. Incredible team. All right, that's cool. Yeah, that Day by Day, I don't know, I love that song from Godspell. And I just realized,
I'm not crazy about watching the musical, but I love that song.
The musical is, you know, it's. I like it. I think it's fine. I got to watch it a lot in high school because my religion teachers were usually like sports coaches, and they got stuck with the religion classes at Luther North, and so they would go, all right, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to the AV, get the video cassette. We're going to watch Godspell because the classes were like a half an hour long,
right?
So that would be like 3 days of the class. that you could just sit and watch Godspell. We would watch Jesus of Nazareth. We would watch, you know, all of these movies and stuff, so that the teachers didn't have to do any prep. They would just bring in a VCR and we would watch a movie for an entire week.
That's awesome.
And so I saw Godspell a lot, and I was reminiscing about it, and so I was on YouTube, and I was like, and then I realized I'm watching it, and I'm like, there's no lyrics to this song. There's just like, and there's absolutely 22 words, and that's it, and they're repeated for 4 minutes. It's 22 words in that song.
And who wrote that?
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay.
I can't remember.
Isn't it the Wicked People? No, I
don't think so. Okay. No, because this was like back in 70.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Godspell. Well, the movie came out in 73, and the show, I believe, started in like maybe 69 or something like that. Because they're all hippies in the thing. So
exactly. Yeah.
All right, so let's get back to it in our next sports song. Where do you want to go?
Okay, let's go to 241. Here's a song. I found this last year and played it, and I just got a real kick out of it. It's Bill Belichick. And you got Bill Belichick, the coach of the New England Patriots, put out a Christmas song? Well, not quite. Fox Sports took words from his press conferences and set them rhythmically to have him perform Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
This is fantastic, by the way. Bill Belichick not voluntarily making
not
a Christmas
voluntarily.
Song.
Not voluntarily.
Here we go. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our trouble will be out of sight. And have yourself a merry little Christmas. Now, no problem. I've got a high note then. Let's just end on a high note.
That's great. That's great. Now, what did they have? They had to scour around like press conference. When did he? Why would he say Christmas at a press conference? I wonder.
He might have, have Merry Christmas. That's
yeah,
a
or they had a game on Christmas, right. Maybe, yeah. Or something like yeah. That. But that's really funny. That's really really funny. Okay, what's next?
Well, every year the NBA has a Christmas game, a couple Christmas games.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been putting out commercials, comical commercials. And a couple years ago, they put out a commercial where players were singing, including Blake Griffin, Dwayne Wade, Victor Oladipo, Zach LaVine, Carmelo Green, a whole bunch of people were singing in it, and they made it a holiday song called The Most Dunktastic Time of the Year.
Okay.
This is 311.
311, okay.
Like the band.
Let's hope it's not like the band. All right, hang on a second. I'm getting there. Okay. Once again, this is a bunch of NBA players, right?
Right.
And it's the most dunktastic time of the year.
It's the most dunktastic time of the year. Behind the back passes while driving through traffic and taking a ball to the hole. Slam dunks we'll be making.
Shot block so amazing.
And three-pointers from the first row.
It's the most dunktastic time.
Oh, the most dunktastic time of the year.
That's good. That was fun.
That's not bad.
Oh, that was fun. So, Christmas for the Christmas NBA games. All right. Okay, where are we going next?
Let's go to 307. You're a big wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And you watch the shows. They'll throw in songs from time to time.
Yes.
And during SmackDown on December 20th, 2001, The Rock had some things to say.
Wow, exactly 17 years ago today.
Exactly. He did his 12 Days of Christmas for the SmackDown audience in New Orleans.
12 Days of Christmas, The Rock, Vintage Rock from 2001.
Vintage.
On a night test face, the great one, this is what he'll see.
Wow.
12 sharpshooters stinging, 11 eyebrows raising, 10 spines a-busting, 9 noggins knocking, 8 kicks a-kicking, 7 punches punching, 6 suplex smashing, 5 seconds of the people chanting The Rock's name. bottoms, three people's elbows on your two buck teeth, and a kicking all over New Orleans.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man, back in those days, like 2000, 2001, nobody controlled the crowd like The Rock. I mean, it's amazing to watch those.
Rock was the man.
Watch those old promos that he's cut, man, and just him in the ring doing something like that. That was at the height. That was at the height of his popularity. And like between him and Stone Cold during that era, great stuff. Really, really great. That's fantastic. Okay, what's next? We'll do one more before we break.
Oh, okay, great. Why don't we go to track number four? And I love this. I know it's really bad, but it's something that's just so unique. It's from the 1971 University of Nebraska football team. They were the national champions, and with the help of a local JC group, they decided to gather the team together, make some money for charity, and put out an LP for Christmas season 1972. It's called The Big Red Christmas. And I just listen to it and tell me if I talked longer than they put any effort into producing it. So,
71 Nebraska.
Yes.
Team. Here we go.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings to you and all of your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. Oh, bring us a funky pudding. Oh, bring us a funky pudding. Oh, bring us a funky pudding and bring it out here. Good tidings to you and all of your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. We won't go until we got some. We won't go until we got some. We won't go until we got some. So bring some out here. Good tidings to you and all of your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year.
That's fantastic.
I didn't even know the lyrics.
But, you know, we should say, like you mentioned, we say this every time you're on, whether it's the holidays or just, you know, a general sports songs visit. A lot of these were one-offs that were done for charity.
This was for a local JC group that provided services to the community.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Hang on, Rick. Okay. Rick Geezer is with us. It is our annual holiday sports songs edition, and more coming up right after we break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. We'll get underway later on, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter is going to talk about the best shows on TV for 2018. That's coming up, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Right now, let's get back to our holiday sports song edition with Rick Geezer. Rick, tell everybody who that was.
That was Danny Werfel, the 1996 Heisman Trophy winner, former Bears backup quarterback. He put out an album in 2001 called Heaven and Nature Sing, Christmas with Danny Werfel and Friends. And that, of course, was O Tannenbaum, and he was on the piano. And we might hear some other because he plays he plays a variety of instruments on a number of tracks.
Great. Okay, cool. We are back, and it's the Christmas edition, holiday edition of Sports Songs. Where do you want to go next?
Let's go to track two. This is a great song, excellent song, not just because it's hockey players and we both love hockey, but just because this song is so fun. The video is excellent if you can go to YouTube and check it out. It's by the 2014 San Jose Sharks, and it's a song called holiday sweater. And check out the video. It's terrific. It features one of my favorite hockey players of the last 10 years, John Scott. He's in it.
Yeah.
I love John Scott. And
also one of the nicest guys ever.
For being as tough as he was on the ice, and as he was such a nice guy.
That All-Star appearance was just one of the greatest
exactly.
things ever. So, all right, so this is the San Jose Sharks.
Their holiday song called Holiday Sweater.
Yeah, this is awesome. Here we go.
Turkey, ham, pumpkin pie. The holidays are here and I want to look fly. Want to look sharp, sharp as cheddar. That's why I got me a holiday sweater.
Made of wool with the holiday print. Mine's so bright, it'll make you squint. Sure, I itch, but that'll get better when I get used to my holiday sweater.
Holiday sweater, holiday sweater. Time for me to rock my holiday sweater. Holiday sweater, holiday sweater. Don't you wish you had my holiday sweater?
They don't look tacky. They don't look weird. They feel kind of fuzzy like a playoff beard. Rudolph's nose will always get redder, and we will rock our holiday sweaters.
Mistletoe is hung above. My festive apparel fits like a glove. You stare too hard, you may take a header. Checking out my holiday sweater.
Holiday sweater. Holiday sweater. Time for me to rock.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites that we've played on the holiday show here. It's one of my
favorites.
Well,
that's one of those, you know, the in the new world and the new entertainment world where they're creating these in-game experiences.
Yeah.
And they've created this for in-game during breaks as
sure.
well as then you can share online and
yeah.
on social media.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of that stuff in the past 10 years or
yeah.
so. Great stuff. Okay, where are we going next?
Let's go to track 12. In 1992, this is from a commercial series that took place here in town for Nike Town, and they had some bigger name athletes at the time participate in this, including Carlton Fisk and Jim Harbaugh. But we're going to hear B.J. Armstrong from the Bulls sing a song about Nike Town, set to a Christmas parody.
Okay, B.J. Armstrong, everybody.
Hi, I'm B.J. Armstrong of the Chicago Bulls. Though many of you are familiar with my talents in basketball, few are aware of my other great gift, my gift for song. So today, I'd like to treat you to my favorite Nike Town Christmas tune. On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 12 Air Jordans for leaping, 11 point guards pointing, 10 uncontested jumpers, 9 pre-shunk t-shirts, 8 more years of my contract, 7 posters of me looking studly, 6 decent refs, 5 world championship rings, 4 cheeseburgers, 3 french fries, 2 size 10 to 13 socks, and a partridge in a pear tree. Well, that's my Nike Town Christmas tune for this year. Frankly, I'm not sure where I'm going to put a big smelly partridge in my apartment, but I am excited about all the other Nike Town gifts my true love gave to me. Nike Town, or North Michigan and Erie. Yeah.
Yeah. Right down the street.
And Nike Town still
there. No,
we're
not. It's not right
not
down
anymore,
the street. Not
yeah.
anymore. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We're I just forgot where we were for yeah. a second. We're not on Michigan Avenue anymore. We're on Wacker. That's right. B.J. Armstrong. That's pretty cool. And there was a series of those, correct?
There was. Like yeah. I said, Carlton Fisk did one. Jim Harbaugh did one.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, what's next?
Okay. We played kind of a goofy Terry Bradshaw. Let's listen to a more serious Terry Bradshaw.
All right.
Track 17. In 2012, he put out a song, a Christmas song, with his daughter, and it's called The Lights of Louisiana, kind of about growing up, his childhood in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And his daughter does the background vocals, and it's a nice song.
This is actually a really sweet song. This is a good one. Here's Terry Bradshaw and his daughter.
Tonight of Louisiana and of Christmas now and then, of Mom and Dad, a the times we had, wishing somehow they'd never end. You can have the New York skyline and the lights of Frisco Bay, 'cause nothing holds a candle to the lights of Louisiana. Louisiana dreaming of family Christmas cheer.
Yeah. That's really nice.
It's sweet.
It is. It is.
I mean, it sounds like it would be played during a Hallmark movie.
Right. Exactly. Know? Exactly. Okay. Hang on a second, Rick. Okay. Rick's going to hang out with us, and after the news, we'll jump into more holiday and Christmas sports songs. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's also for talk and text. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. So like us, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Coming up after 2:30, Dan Feinberg is going to join us. He joins us every 2 weeks. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he's going to talk about his favorite TV shows of 2018. That's coming up, and we're going to have our annual discussion of your favorite Christmas movies, the best Christmas movies, maybe the weirdest or the funniest, or the ones that you watch annually. So we'll jump into that. So think about your favorite Christmas movies and all of that. And we'll get into that after 3:30. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now, though, my guest is Rick Geezer. He is here for the annual Holiday Sports Songs edition. And we will, of course, and we're just a little while away.
Moments
away from Honky the Christmas Goose.
Whoa.
Which is the greatest Christmas song of all time.
I agree.
And officially kicks off, as far as I'm concerned, Christmas begins.
Christmas will begin.
When you hear Johnny Bauer's Honky the Christmas Goose. What did we hear coming back?
We heard Sleigh Ride by Eric Schau, the former pitcher for the Padres.
Exactly. All right, great. And these are sports songs that are Christmas holiday edition. Let's get back into it. What else do we got?
Well, and let's play track 59. This is one we've all learned to love over the last few years. In 2015, the Montreal Canadiens, led by P.K. Subban, who was playing up there at the time, he got the team together, and they recorded a video and a song to the Frozen song, Let It Go. We heard a terrible version by NBA player earlier today.
Right.
But this is really fun. This is great. Excellent version.
2015 Habs doing Let It Go.
The snow glows white on the mountain tonight, not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation, and looks like I'm the king.
The wind is howling like the swirling storm inside.
Couldn't keep it in, heaven knows I tried.
Don't let them in, don't let them see.
Be the good boy you always have to be.
Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know.
Well, now they know.
Let it go, let it go.
Can't hold it back anymore.
Let it go,
let go.
turn away and slam the door.
I don't care what they're going to say.
Let the storm rage on.
The cold never bothered me anyway.
Right.
It's funny how some distance.
The video is terrific. You just got a taste of it.
Yeah.
Half of it by listening.
Yeah,
because
they do the whole song.
They do the whole song.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Check it out if you can.
If you can see the video online. And it's just so. It's, you know, hearing that, it's just so obvious that they're hockey players. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
you could just. Yes. If somebody said, some athletes recorded this song. 12 seconds in, you'd go, they're hockey players. Hockey players
exactly.
Recorded this song.
Exactly. There's too many accents.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. You remember that when Chance the Rapper hosted SNL last year?
Oh, as the hockey
and
announcer?
He played the replacement for the hockey announcer.
Yeah.
And it was just about how a black guy has no idea what's going on in hockey. And then he was completely blindsided by the fact that Kenan Thompson, he's like, oh, wait a minute, there's actually a black guy in the stands. And by the way, Chance the Rapper was fantastic the night he hosted.
He is a great, I would love to see him do more.
Oh, he should. Yeah, no, he was great. But that was really one of my favorite sketches of last year was Chance the Rapper not understanding hockey.
Yeah. What did you think of the Weezer sketch that's gotten so much
hilarious?
That was a very good sketch.
Yeah, no, and it was
a little inside for some.
Yeah,
but I've had that conversation.
Oh yeah,
and I know others who've had that actual conversation.
Yeah. And that's blown up on the internet.
Yeah.
That's particular sketch from a very strong SNL.
Yeah.
Last week after like three in a row that were not good.
Oh, very poor.
But this one, Matt Damon was hilarious, and they had some really strong stuff on that episode.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Okay, what's next?
Okay, let's play, where is it now? It's a track 271. The NBA put this out. Players Kevin Durant, Derrick Rose, James Harden, Steve Nash, Stephen Curry, LeBron James, names you might have heard of. They do Jingle Bells, but by dribbling basketballs. They don't sing it. It's just them
dribbling basketballs.
Yes.
Did Derrick Rose get hurt during this at all?
He did. Yes.
All right. Let's listen to this. Some dribbling basketballs and jingle hoops.
It's called Jingle Hoops.
Tune it up, KD.
That sounds good right there.
Don't mess this up.
Please tell me the camera was on.
Special edition Christmas Day uniforms now available.
Now that was explain what was happening there because
I screwed up because it was the season before they did it dribbling. This they put bells on nets and they were shooting three pointers.
Okay.
In time.
Okay, and they were shooting. Now, you want to hear the dribbling one now?
Yeah, let's do that now.
Okay, so this was the dribbling one. Who's on this one?
That, on the dribbling one, that's Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, Russell Westbrook, and that's from 2002,
okay.
Or 2012.
And the last one was them sinking three-pointers with bells attached to the net.
Correct.
But this one is dribbling.
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Christmas Day uniforms now available at NBAstore.com and other retailers.
That's good.
And they produced that, and they all weren't in the room. They were all at different times for the video
and the audio recording. They put it all together.
They all put it together.
Oh, that's bad. That was very cool.
It's in the middle of the season, they're all
right.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was rare. That was very, very cool. Okay, all right. What do you want to hear next?
Let's go to track 55. Love this song, too. It came out in 1993. It's Hall of Fame broadcaster Jack Buck doing his 'Twas the Night Before a Cardinal Christmas.
All right. Here we go.
Thank you.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and down on the field, not a player was stirring, not even Todd Zeal. The gloves were all hung from the lockers with care, in hopes that the Cards would be back strong next year. The players were home, all snug in their beds, while visions of home runs just danced in their heads. And I in the press box with Mike and with Joe looked down on the field at the new fallen snow. When all of a sudden there arose such a clatter, I looked down from the box to see what was the matter. And what my eyes saw, I could hardly relate. There were miniature Clydesdales surrounding home plate. With a driver so quick that he moved with a flurry, I knew in a moment it must be Joe Torre. More rapid than Cardinals, his words now they came, as he gave them the signs and he called them by name. Now Ozzie, now Donovan, Gerald and Ray, now Bob and Luis and Real Cormier. On Tracy, on Brian, on Mark and Jose, on Tom and Bernard, on Greg and Renee. Way back to the fence now and over the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. Then I heard him exclaim as he left, without reason, Merry Christmas to all, and we'll see you next season.
That's great. I just wish it wasn't about the Cardinals.
Ah, yeah. I love hearing all those names. I love that. So hysterical, those names.
It was great. I mean, it's really great, but I hate the Cardinals.
Well, and then you think about it, 1993, you know, I'm thinking, yeah. Oh, that wasn't that. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
It was 25 yeah. years ago, yeah. Man. Yeah. Okay, hang on, Rick, okay?
Okay.
All right, Rick is going to hang out with us. We got one more segment of the holiday Christmas edition of Sports Songs, and that segment will end with Honky the Christmas Goose. So stay tuned. All right, welcome back. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. And again, we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios on a Thursday morning, and it's a Triple Play Thursday coming up. Yeah, man. That's 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg joining us after the news at the bottom of the hour here to talk about his favorite shows of the TV year for 2018. And then we're going to open up the phone lines and the text lines, and we're going to do our annual What's Your Favorite Christmas Movie? And your favorite Christmas movies, 312-981-7200. Rick Geezer is here, and again, that was Stan the Man.
Stan the Man Musial, that one's from the Cardinal Christmas CD.
There you go. All right.
Earlier we heard some stuff from his CD full of him playing classic harmonica songs from the American Songbook.
Exactly. Very, very cool stuff. Okay, and now we're back, and again, we're only a few minutes away from the annual tradition of Johnny Bauer's The Greatest Christmas Song of All Time, Honky the Christmas Goose, coming up in just a few minutes. But we got a few more Sports Songs Holiday Edition to play before we get to that. What are we going next?
Let's go to track five. It's the Wegeman Brothers. They were Olympic skiers. They were on Olympic ski teams throughout the 50s, and they were part of the group that was trying to promote the 1960 Winter Games at Squaw Valley. And they put out an album with a Christmas song, Winter Wonderland.
Oh, okay.
And this is pretty cool.
Okay, the Wegeman Brothers.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open. We're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland.
Gone away,
is a bluebird,
here to stay,
is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland.
In the meadow we can build a snowman.
at his parson brought.
You know, I gotta say, Rick, this is one of my favorites. This is one of my very favorites that we play every year. It is so good.
It's really good.
Man, the harmonies, the vocals, I mean, really, really good. This, I think, is one of the best Christmas songs, you know, one of the best Christmas performances that we have by athletes every year. I think it's great.
I really enjoy it. I mean, it kind of reminds me, remember in the 90s they put out those CDs of kind of lounge songs?
Yeah, yeah.
And, it would fit in.
It would totally fit in. But man, surprisingly beautiful vocals out of these guys, and they're professional skiers. I mean, that's one of my favorites that we play every year. Absolutely. Okay, where are we going next?
Let's go to 275. This is from a local group. I found this online, and it's the Chicago Gay Hockey Association.
I love this. Yeah,
this is so fun. It's their version of All I Want for Christmas. And this is a local hockey league, and they invite people to participate in the league and just have some fun. And if you watch the video, there's a conga line on ice, great choreography, just a lot of fun.
Yeah, this is really great. The Chicago Gay Hockey Association, All I Want for Christmas.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own, more than you could ever know. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is you. I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. Hang my stocking there upon the fireplace. Santa Claus will make me happy with the toy on Christmas Day. I just want you for my own, more than you could ever know. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is you.
Yeah. That's great. That's good stuff.
That's good. That's
really, really
fun.
Good stuff. Okay, it's time now.
Oh!
So we have to get ready. Are we all ready?
I'm ready.
Okay,
this
why
song
don't you
was released in 1965. It was released by Hall of Famer Johnny Bower. He was a goalie for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And this song was released, as I said, in 65, and it reached number 29 on the Canadian charts. And it's a perennial favorite up in Canada.
Yep.
And it's now a Chicago favorite because of Nick DeJulia.
This is it. We are about to actually kick off Christmas. This is the officially Christmas is here. Because this is the greatest Christmas song of all time. We play it every year when Rick is here. This is Johnny Bower. Everybody, it's Honky the Christmas Goose.
Honky, honky the Christmas Goose got so fat that he was no use till he learned how to blow his nose. Honk the way a goose nose blows. After that, and just for fun, it was a simple matter. He would blow his honky horn to see the people scatter. Cars and planes and trucks and trains would get out of his way. And when they heard that honky horn, this is what they'd say.
Oh, honky, honky, the Christmas goose got so fat that he was use till he learned how to blow his nose. Honk the way a goose nose blows.
Christmas Eve was bright and clear, no trouble was inside. But up in space a traffic jam gave Santa Claus a fright. With rockets, kites, and satellites, and melting dogs and all, his team of tiny reindeer were slow to
got so fat that he was no use, till he learned how to blow his nose. Oh, the way a goose nose blows.
Santa sure was worried for the children on his list. He had to get a move on or their stockings would be missed. Just then he heard a honky horn a-coming down the sky, and everything moved over to let the sleigh go by.
Oh, honky, honky, the Christmas goose, though he's fat, he's still some use. Christmas sleigh, he honks his horn to tell the world that Santa Claus is on his way.
Best Christmas song ever.
That's awesome.
It's the best. Rick, always a pleasure. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to everyone.
And
to you.
And thanks again. It's always a pleasure to have you on every year.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And we'll get you on again probably for Dan's Super Bowl time. Yeah, we'll get you around in the Super Bowl. We can do
NBA
some football
playoffs.
Yeah.
Start a baseball. There's lots of stuff to get on.
All right, Rick. Check out sportssongs.com. Rick Easer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. The news is up after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and we're here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. We'll get underway. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. One artist, three songs. For that, we're going to talk about Christmas movies. We got a busy show for tomorrow, so we're going to, before we take our holiday break, because Esmeralda is going to be here and Jeff Tuckman is going to be here. So I want to take the opportunity to jump into the your favorite Christmas movies and movies that you watch every year and which ones they are and all that cool stuff and the classics and even the weird ones. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now, though, we want to welcome Dan Feinberg to the show. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're going to talk about some of the best stuff from TV this past year. He joins us every 2 weeks, and let's welcome Dan to the show. Dan, welcome.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right, how have you been, sir?
Oh, it's the end of the year as we know it, and I feel fine.
All right, well, let's get right to it. You have the 10 best TV shows of 2018 you wrote about, and then the next 10 best.
And then 10 more honorable mention, too. So really could go on forever. And as I keep telling people, if their favorite show didn't make that top 30, it means I hate that show and think it's horrible, and therefore that they have no taste.
It's always nice to be subtle, Dan. That's good.
I want to make that clear to everyone. No, like a dozen different people, of course, you know, on Twitter today asked me where their favorite show was, and in at least half of the cases, my answer was it probably would have been in my next 10 or maybe my next 10. Yeah. I like a lot of shows that didn't make my list. Just you got to draw a line somewhere, and 30 is a hell of an artificial place to draw
yeah.
the line.
Yeah, yeah. As we speak, every time you're on, Dan, we talk about that there is just so much TV. So obviously, you know, your lists at the end of the year are going to increase because there's so much to see.
It is true. The FX annual tabulation of the scripted TV haul came out last week, and the answer for the number of scripted television shows in 2018 was 495.
Oh my God!
and that is before you get to the amount of time that I spend watching documentary series, because those don't count as scripted shows. Or the amount of time I spend watching Survivor or American Idol or Top Chef
yeah.
or anything like that, because those don't count either. There's a lot of TV.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so I'm enjoying. I really enjoyed the first two episodes of Top Chef. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, the people seem to be cooking good food so
yeah,
far. Though
absolutely.
I don't know if there's anyone crazy, and I kind of like there isn't the sort of mad molecular gastronomy scientist.
Yeah, well, we already have a jerk, Brandon is the jerk of the season. We've got that already. But I like the characters. I think they're good, and I like what they're cooking so far, and I like the location. But I just like the show. You know, I mean, I just happen to love Top Chef. It's my favorite. So
I'm right there with you, sir.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, listen, why don't we just start? Let's do it. You got 30 shows that you pulled out to talk about for 2018. Why don't we just start with 30 and move our way up?
Okay, let me go to the bottom of my list. I did sort of just honorable mention, and so that's really just going to be these are, and I didn't do blurbs for these.
Okay, that's fine.
My number, and these are in alphabetical order, but my third 10 of 2018 includes Barry, Counterpart on Stars, The Good Fight on CBS All Access, Insecure on HBO, Kidding on Showtime, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO again, Little Drummer Girl on AMC, Sharp Objects on HBO, Superstore on NBC, and HBO's The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling.
Oh, okay. All right. I've seen almost all of those. And
I know that several of them are your favorites.
Yeah.
So well, among your favorites.
Yeah, Barry is way up there. John Oliver, you know, is must see TV as far as I'm concerned. I liked Kidding very much. So that's it. And if those, see, that's the thing. If you can think of 20 shows that are better than a very impressive group right there that you've had, that's interesting. Now, you did write about the other ones, right? The top 20.
Yes, I did. I did full extended blurbulations, for the other 20, but at a certain point, just have to draw the line.
No, I
on
understand.
How many blurbs you're right.
Yeah, I understand. Well, why don't we start with, I've got your second 10 in front of me right now. It starts with Escape to Dannemora, which I thought was really terrific, and I'm glad that you included it.
How far into it are you?
I'm caught up.
Okay, so that's through five?
Five episodes, yes.
Is that what it is? Yeah, okay. I've seen the whole season, so this is based on the full thing. And yeah, I am a sucker for prison escape shows, though somewhat ironically not for Fox's Prison Break, which I got sick of very quickly,
yeah,
because it turned out it wasn't really about a prison break at all.
No,
it was about brotherhood or some such. I
watched it because it was shot locally and I had friends on it. That's the only reason. That's the only reason that I watched it.
But yes, Escape from Dannemora, some people I've seen complaining that they feel like it's a little bit slow. I personally really enjoyed the time to get to know the characters played by Paul Dano and Benicio del Toro. This coming week's episode is even more focused on them, and particularly the performance from Patricia Arquette, who's really fantastic. I feel like everyone decided about 3 months ago that the Emmy was already Amy Adams's and that she was unbeatable, and I think there's a fairly strong chance that Patricia Arquette is going to sneak in and steal several of those awards, at least. Probably not the Golden Globe. I feel pretty confident that Amy Adams will still win the Golden Globe.
Yeah.
But yeah, great performances. This past week's episode, which is the fifth, I thought was really breathless and thrilling and exciting.
Yep.
And I think it's just a show with great nuance and that does the genre right. And I noted that there were a bunch of really good miniseries genre efforts this year, including The Terror on AMC, Little Drummer Girl, and Escape at Dannemora, both of which I mentioned in my 20 through 30 range, and then also Netflix's Haunting of Hill House. And both The Terror and Haunting of Hill House would have been, if I'd gone up to a top 40, they definitely would have been in that next 10. So, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Well, Haunting of Hill House was one of my favorite things that I watched in 2018, for sure. I thought it was just great. I would have ranked that pretty high if I were to make a list, because I thought they did a great job with that.
Entirely fair.
Okay. All right. So let's go to number 19. Sorry for Your Loss.
Yes. The first Facebook Watch show that's ever been in my any of my top lists that I've even watched and finished, because I'm not likely to finish the Catherine Zeta-Jones Facebook Watch thing that's currently on. you think it's going to be a show about grief, and so it's going to be sad and miserable. It turns out that the show has a surprising amount of tonal dexterity. It is very much a show about living, in addition to a show about being sad and grieving. And Elizabeth Olsen is really wonderful, and if anyone had been watching this show at all, Elizabeth Olsen almost certainly would have been in awards conversations, and I'm a little disappointed she wasn't. It's just a show that could have gone wrong in so many different ways and goes right in most of those ways, and I really appreciate the high degree of difficulty it has to do a show about grief that doesn't make you feel miserable the entire time watching it. It is smart and sensitive and sometimes funny and just a really good show.
Okay. All right. I've not seen that. Number 18, one of my favorites, Baskets.
Yes, that would be a collective favorite of and listeners will know that we discuss that basically every week. In the,
even when it's not airing, even when it's not airing, we discuss it. I love the show so much.
I have to believe that a certain percentage of that show's viewership comes from our relentless banging of the drum for it.
So, I would like to think so, yeah.
Yeah, I honestly had left the show out of my top 30. I'd been in my mind, I sort of got the idea that it was a minor disappointment after last season, and then I was going over the episodes because I wanted to put an episode of From Baskets in my best episodes list, and instead I started going through the episodes, especially in the second half of the season,
Yeah. And
so many of them were so wonderful, and it was like, oh, okay, I forgot about that. That was great. I forgot about that. That was great.
Yeah,
and by the time I got done going over the descriptions, I was like, oh, this was a wonderful season, especially for Louis Anderson as Christine Baskets. It's just a good and special and strange and magical show, and more people should watch it, but I'm glad and amazed that we've gotten three and now four coming up at some point seasons out of it. I find that remarkable.
Me too. I feel the same way. And I do love it. And Louis Anderson, and again, as we've mentioned, the show's about him now. He's about her. It's about Christine. She's become the main character on the show.
And how smart of Zach Galifianakis and company for realizing it. They didn't need to do that. I mean, Zach Galifianakis is the executive producer and co-creator on the show. There is no reason why he had to come to the correct conclusion that the main character of the show should be Christine, and yet he did. And I consider that an amazing piece of egoless producing on Zach Galifianakis' part, because I can't imagine really and truly, honestly, anybody else coming to that conclusion. The show was supposed to be about, look, it's two Zach Galifianakis.
Right.
And instead it hasn't been that. And I think it is an amazing sign of restraint on his part, and he deserves a lot of credit for recognizing that.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And again, who would have thought, that like 20 years ago, if someone said to me, Louis Anderson is going to have his career role playing Zach Galifianakis' mother, I would have said, yeah, you're crazy. But that's pretty much what happened.
Several parts of that probably would have confused you 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
I think.
Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a break here on 720 WG, and we come back. More of the best TV of 2018 from Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right, let's take a break. More after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're here till 5 a.m. Opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. We'll get underway in a little bit. That's coming up at 312-981-7200, one of our three songs. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, back to our conversation with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Joins us every 2 weeks. It's always great to talk to Dan. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we're talking about his picks for the best TV of 2018. And let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, we're at number 17 on your list of bet. We're counting up to number one. 17 of your best TV shows of 2018. And it's Brockmeyer, which is a show that I must confess I've only seen one or two episodes of. I enjoyed it, but it's one of those shows that never was on my radar to watch regularly.
It feels like a Nick kind of show to me, honestly. So you might want to carve out time, because I don't know that any show on television makes me laugh harder than Brockmeyer. When Brockmeyer hits, so many of the punchlines come from so far off in a different world, and it takes whole seconds to realize where the punchline just came from and how brilliant the writing is. And Hank Azaria has done this amazing job of taking a character who started life as a funny-or-die sketch character, kind of a composite of baseball announcers, only this one as a drunken buffoon, and he's made the character into this really hilariously sad portrait of addiction, loneliness, and professional drive. And it's wonderful to watch. It is such a great performance, and the show is so lewd and inappropriate, and IFC has given them, obviously, the ability to go do whatever the heck they want, mm-hmm. and I appreciate that. Basically, it has become, to some degree, a live-action version of BoJack Horseman, a show that I also love, and I love that. It takes depression and addiction extremely seriously while also being utterly ridiculous and hilarious.
Oh, okay, good. I will definitely catch up with that. I got a Christmas break coming up, Dan. So I'll have some.
It goes by really quick. I caught up about 2.5 weeks ago. I was pretty much the entire second season behind, and I watched most of the second season in a couple hours in an afternoon, laughing the whole way.
It's, that's great.
Real pleasure.
All right, during my break, I have a lot of catching up on stuff to do, including a bunch of for your consideration screeners that are on my coffee table that I have to catch up on before I do my year end movie lists. So, all right. 16 on your list, which I would have put higher. This is just me. It's One Day at a Time, which I love.
It's just a lovely show, and it is a show with more heart than just about anything on TV. It is a perfect example of how to do a multi-cam comedy well in 2018, which there aren't that many examples of. It can be funny, it can be smart, it can be trenchant in its observation of modern America, and the cast is truly wonderful, from Justina Machado to National Treasure, Rita Moreno, to Stephen Tobolowsky, etc., etc. It is a show that is just such a pleasure to watch, and I love One Day at a Time. I wish more people would watch it, because it really is. It's a wide audience show, and it makes me a little sad that it had to fight to the degree that it did to get a third season. So yeah. Hopefully more and more people will hear the buzz, and maybe the third season will finally be a breakthrough and the fourth season will come easy. I would like that.
And when I first heard that they were doing like a reboot of One Day at a Time, I was an eye roller on that one. It only took me like maybe two episodes to go, oh, okay, I see where they're going with this, and it's great. And the second season I thought was even better than the first season, and I can't wait for the third season. It premieres in February. So I really wonder
if the name was a drawback for a lot of people. Wonder if a lot of people were like you, and I hate that idea, because I hate the idea that a name could turn people off a good show, which has always bothered me with things like Cougar Town, Terriers. I don't understand that mindset. I don't watch shows based on the title, but there are people out there who clearly think differently.
Yeah. Okay. Next, number 15 is Lodge 49.
I assume you haven't gotten this one yet?
I have not, because I know that I would like it. And, yeah, and I hear from a lot of people. I know David Pesquezzi pretty well, and he was very vocal about me watching it, and I still haven't.
So. It's not going to be for everyone, but I think it's for a lot of the same people that Baskets is for. I think it's for people with a particular kind of quirky sense of humor. In my blurb here, I described it as Terriers and John from Cincinnati and the Big Lebowski rolled into a strange ball that was adapted by Thomas Pynchon.
See, and I like all of those things. So
and you just have to give it some time because it's not a show that immediately jumps out and tells you what it is. Sometimes it's a comedy. Sometimes it's a dreamy little almost fantasy. It's got elements of mystery to it. It's really hard to describe, and therefore it was also hard for AMC to promote. And this is one where I'm very glad it got a second season because it had basically no audience, and so I will just keep telling people for the next few months that this is one that they need to sample because I think it's a really, really good show.
Okay. And speaking of Wyatt Russell, the more I see him, the more he is he just is so his dad. I mean, it's just I saw the film Overlord, which by the way I really enjoyed, and it was really a casting coup for him to be in that movie because the movie itself. Have you seen Overlord?
I have not seen Overlord.
Because it owes so much to John Carpenter that it was just genius casting to put Wyatt Russell in there because he's just so his dad. But I love the guy and I'm looking forward to watching Lodge 49. So
I look forward to hearing what you think of it.
Okay, cool. Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, and he writes for the Hollywood Reporter about TV. And we got to get back. We're going to take a break here for the news. And when we come back, we've got more of Dan and his best of list for TV this year. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we'll be back after the news. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. The opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. We'll start them a little bit later. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-720. We're going to talk about, we'll take this opportunity on this show this morning to talk about our annual, annually talking about the best Christmas movies, your favorites, maybe the weirdest ones that you watch every year. We'll get into that. Christmas movies at 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we're talking about his picks for the best TV shows of 2018. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, number 14. Oh, I love this show, too. Killing Eve. Tell everybody about this show.
I'm sure we need to move quicker because there are lots of shows in my top 20. But yes, Killing Eve is stylish, sexy, it's fun, it's dark, it's suspenseful. Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh are great, and I wish people were nominating both of them for awards as opposed to just Sandra Oh, because to me, you can't have one without the other, and I wish they could be nominated as a joint pairing.
Yeah,
they're so good. The show is really good,
and that's the thing. That's the thing, Dan. I personally want to thank you for insisting that I watch it because I wasn't watching it, and then you said you need to watch this show, and I did, and it's great. So
it's an easy one. I knew you were going to like that one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And speaking of liking, and I would have put this one much higher on your list. Number 13 is The Good Place. The for me, the best show on broadcast television.
Absolutely the best show on broadcast television, and it was in certain drafts of my top 10 and then fell out. It's just an amazingly dynamic show, and I continue to love the fact that every three or four episodes it's becoming in a completely different show, and to some degree I wonder if that is a problem, because at some point they are going to run out of shows that this could be. But on the other hand, it's amazing that they've had stories, innovation, and originality for three seasons now, and so I guess it's not for me to wonder when they're going to run out of ideas. It's just to enjoy them while they got them.
Yeah, it's such a good show. Number 12, BoJack Horseman, another terrific show, and I love the fact that that Comedy Central is showing them now.
I find that I watch 2 minutes at the end of old BoJack episodes before the start of The Daily Show.
Right, right.
And They always make me laugh, and also I can't tell you how much I appreciate getting to watch those 2 minutes as opposed to 2 minutes of Tosh.0. So
I agree with you 1,000% on that. Absolutely, yes.
But yes, Bojack is great. It turns out that Bojack was also number 12 on my list last year, and I think that I kind of, in my mind, pretended that the fourth season was a minor drop in quality. I don't think the fifth season was. It remains just a really, really special show that does more than it needs to at almost every turn. It's full of little tiny jokes, full of big emotional beats, and I want Will Arnett to get an Emmy nomination for the Free Churro episode, which was this season's standout.
Yeah, absolutely. Number 11 is Pose, which is a show that I have not seen. But I know that you really love it.
It is just such a very good show, and it's another show that isn't exactly what you expect it to be, and it deserves all of the credit it's gotten for the cast of trans actors and how progressive and inclusive the cast is. But it is also such a show that really and truly is about family and community and finding your place and finding your identity and finding who you are. And I don't think it should be a show that anybody wouldn't be able to watch. It is an amazing ensemble. I am still so pissed off at the Screen Actors Guild for not nominating it for drama ensemble, because this to me is everything an ensemble should be, and more people should watch Pose. First season is only 8 episodes, so folks should check it out.
Okay. All right. If we have time, I do want to get your reaction to the SAG nominations, because you had a very strong reaction to it. Let's get to your top 10, shall we? Number 10, Better Call Saul.
I just love me some Better Call Saul. It is not the most consistent show on TV. It is a show with 3 storylines, of which 2 are a little hit and miss. I don't always care what Mike is up to. I don't always know what Gus and Nacho are up to. But the main storyline, which continues to be Jimmy and Kim, is TV's best doomed romance. And Bob Odenkirk and Ray Seahorn, who does not get nearly enough credit, play it magically each week. And I promise you, and I've said this before and I still believe it, if you watch Better Call Saul, you will fall in love with Ray Seahorn so quickly. Mm-hmm. It'll be like a bolt out of the blue. She is so good, and she should be on every awards list, and the fact that she's not is a sham.
Okay. Okay, we talked about this one the last time you were on, when we were talking about the Golden Globe nominations, and that's A Very English Scandal, which comes in at number 9, which I still have not watched since the last time we spoke, but I know you spoke very highly of it the last time we had you on.
Yes, it is only 3 episodes, and it is funny and quirky and devastatingly powerful, and Hugh Grant and Ben Whishaw, both of them are fantastic actors who have been great in many things. I don't think either one of them has been better in anything, and who would have guessed that 2018, between this and Paddington 2, would be perhaps the best year of Hugh Grant's career. What a great year. And yeah, it's only 3 episodes, only 3 hours. People should check it out. It's really special and surprising.
Okay. Number 8, My Brilliant Friend.
Indeed, HBO's Italian language adaptation of the first of Elena Ferrante's Neapolitan Quartet. It's a beautiful period coming-of-age story, wonderfully cast. The Italian actors are largely newcomers, certainly for American audiences they will be. And it's just a really good adaptation of a really good book. It's how to do adaptation right. It captures the details of the book, but also more than that, it captures the emotions and the emotional swing of the book. I think this is a special series, and it's special because it's so different from anything else on TV, and I love that HBO did this. I love that they did it in Italian because they didn't need to, and I love that they put it in their Sunday night prestige slot to make it clear this is something that people should pay heed to, and I think it is a show worthy of paying heed to.
Okay. Number 7, Big Mouth. which just makes me laugh in a good way, obviously.
I love Big Mouth. It is just such a rude and inappropriate and frequently gross show. And every time I think of it, I think of something grosser and more inappropriate than the moment before. And yet every single moment in the show is authentic and feels right and feels earned. It is a show that in any lesser hands could have felt kind of gross and bro-y, but instead puts so much effort into making sure that it gets the female perspective, and I just respect it so much for that, and I also love it because it's a show full of hilarious songs and wonderful vocal talent, and it's just a great show.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Number six, Dear White People.
Dear White People, this would be Justin Simien's adaptation of Justin Simien's reasonably acclaimed movie from a few years ago. This is the second season of it, and it is a college series that does right by the college experience, and it's just smart, it's innovative, it tackles big issues, the cast is wonderful. And I wish more people were watching it. It's another Netflix show that struggles in the ratings and that took entirely too long to get renewed for its most recent season. And all I can do is keep telling people to watch these shows. I told Netflix people that I had several of their shows in my top 10 and my top 20, and they were unable to guess which they were because Netflix has their big shows, and apparently I like smaller Netflix shows.
I see. The ones that aren't as big as the others, yeah.
A little bit less loved, and okay. I'm okay with that.
Well, let's go to the next one then, because that's the case here, too. Number five on your list is The End of the Effing World.
Another Netflix show that was just able to sneak up. Netflix kind of announced it was coming about a week before it premiered at the very beginning of the year. I watched it all in one afternoon, I believe New Year's Eve of last year. And it's a show about two outcasts, one of whom may be a budding serial killer. And they're sort of strange road trip romance in the vein of Bonnie and Clyde or True Romance or Badlands. And if it matches with your sense of humor, you will love the show. And if it doesn't match with your sense of humor, you will probably turn it off within 5 to 10 minutes. And I find that reassuring. I like shows that declare what they are and who they're for very quickly, and this one absolutely does that. It is totally on my wavelength, and I am dreading what a second season is going to look like because the first season was pretty much perfect on its own.
Right, I loved it too, and this is a show that also appeals to my sensibilities big time. And I watched it. It took me a couple of days actually. It took me 2 days to watch it all the way through, but. I just think it's great. But again, it's not for everyone, but I wish more people would watch it. I'm with you on that 100%.
So. For sure, it's not for everyone.
Well, exactly. All right, Dan, hang on. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. When we come back, we will get into the top four shows that Dan Feinberg picked for the best TV shows of 2018. And there you go. Okay. Welcome back, everyone. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And joining us right now is Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we are talking about Dan's choices for the best TV shows of 2018, and we're up to his fourth favorite show of the year. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, number four is The Americans, and for some reason, I don't know why, but I expected that to be higher on your list. And number four is very, very high, but I don't know why. I don't know because I just expected, knowing you and the conversations that we've had, I expected the Americans to either be on the top or number two.
I swear there that I've said great and excited things about the top three as well. But yes, no, the Americans is wonderful. It is the great drama of this particular moment in time, and it went out really well. It it's not the easiest thing to do, and it's not the easiest thing to do when you have a show in which there's a strong possibility that any of your characters could be killed or die or be outed or whatever at the least expected of moments. And the show's creators had to find a way to navigate the season in a way that was satisfying to both the most bloodthirsty but also most emotionally invested of fans. And I think they did a great job. We've talked extensively about how great Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys have been, and awesome. And I'm glad that at least Matthew Rhys got an Emmy, and so that was worth it. But also, Kedrick Salati as Henry, the oft-neglected son, had a great final season, and Holly Taylor as Paige, also fantastic. Noah Emmerich never got an Emmy nomination for this show, which is utterly ridiculous. I do not know how he didn't get an Emmy nomination for the last season. Such a great performance and so integral to the arc of the show. This is yet another show that has not been nearly watched enough and that people are going to discover. And the common reaction that everyone is going to have in 5 to 10 years as they're watching the show is, why was I not just watching this live?
Yeah.
What did I think the show was going to be that I didn't want to watch it live? And
yeah.
I don't know what to answer.
It's the funny thing about that kind of thing is that's how most people got to The Wire. I was, like, we've talked about this before. I was on board in 2002, like from episode one. I was with The Wire, but it's so funny how that, like, years later, people are like, oh my God. It's like discovering it years later. And I think you're right. I think most people are going to discover The Americans in a couple of years. Yeah.
But I think it happens with some frequency. Breaking Bad, at least people discovered it sooner. So Breaking Bad had 3 or 4 seasons where no one was watching it, and then people found it. But honestly, no one really ever found Mad Men. Mad Men was a show with a fairly minuscule audience right till the end. But people are going to discover that show forever. And, I have conversations constantly with people finding, say, for example, Halt and Catch Fire, who are like, this is a great show. Why did I not watch it? And the answer is almost always, I don't know. Why didn't you watch it? You should have.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking about shows that people should watch, your number three is one of my favorites of this past year, and that's Succession.
Yep, another show that did not have people watching it at the beginning, and I'm not sure even by the end that it had developed an audience, but people have been talking about this show a lot, and I really feel like this is a show that maybe is on the verge of an explosion, an audience explosion, when it returns for its second season. Because I think that I can't think of many shows that have gained critical momentum in the way this one did. The initial reviews, a lot of them were, oh, look, it's another rich family. I don't care about their problems. They're all awful people. And I think a lot of people, as they went along, gradually began to realize, A, that the show never claimed they weren't awful people and didn't really care if you loved these people, but maybe wanted you to understand them. And I think after 10 episodes, you understand these awful characters and you really feel for them, even as you're laughing with them. To me, this show is a brilliant dark comedy satire of wealth in America, but for other people, it's a dark drama with some comedic moments, and either one is fine. I'm not going to tell people they're wrong because people should watch Succession.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's funny as hell, and the cast is great. And I all the time I single out Kieran Culkin because I never thought that kind of performance could come from him based on like his previous work, but he's phenomenal in it. So. Number two on your list would be my number one, and that's Atlanta.
Yep, that one was. This one's easy, and if it had been number one, that would have been perfectly satisfying to me as well. It was a great second season for a great show that had a difficult time having to live up to the first season, and so they responded by simply making a second season that was in no way like the first season, and that was in no way like anything else on TV. And we talked extensively and have talked extensively about the Teddy Perkins episode, which is, to me, without any question, 2018's best single episode of television.
Yeah, me too. I agree.
But if you look, there were 5 or 6 or 7 episodes that were, if not equally good, that were little mini revolutions of their own. And just every single week you tune into Atlanta not exactly knowing what show it is that you're going to be watching, not necessarily knowing who the star of the show is that you're going to be watching. And if it was, you know, if it was Lakeith Stanfield, that was a pretty great show to be watching. If it was Donald Glover, that was a pretty great show to be watching. If it was Brian Tyree Henry, that was a fantastic show to be watching. The couple weeks that it was Ozzy Beetz's show, those were great episodes.
Yeah.
So an amazingly versatile cast, any of them capable of carrying episodes. And I'm glad that FX has given Donald Glover the chance to just sort of keep doing whatever he wants to with this. And now it's going to be interesting to see how he tops season two and season three. And I guess the answer is going to be in unexpected ways.
Okay, number one is locally, we're very happy that you chose this as number one, as your number one, Dan. America to Me, number one for the TV shows of 2018.
So I know that there have definitely been people in Chicago who haven't loved the way that it represented Oak Park and River Forest High School and how it represented the city's public school system. But yes, Steve James's documentary series on Stars, I am constantly encountering people who haven't even heard of it. And part of that is because people don't know necessarily to look to Stars for quality programming. And I guess it's up to Stars to keep building up a roster and convincing them, because they do have good shows. You know, people watch Outlander, but people would also like Vita. They would also like the Miami football unscripted show that was paired with America to Me. But America to Me is the word I kept using in my blurb here was substantive. It is simply a show that has weight, that is about things. And whether it's about the white privilege, whether it's about the achievement gap in schools and how it impacts people based on gender, race, or class, it is a show that is constantly having big ideas on its mind, and yet if you actually watch it on a week-to-week basis, it's also a series of 12 wonderful character portraits that in any given week inspire you, make you sad, make your heart soar. It is a show that is every bit as emotionally substantive as it is intellectually substantive. And, you know, people intimidated by documentaries, it's a John Hughes movie also, only with perhaps a little bit more on its mind. It's just such a great show. And I saw it, the first five episodes at Sundance way back in January, and it never left my mind the entire year.
Steve James is one of the best documentary filmmakers ever, and he's a Chicago treasure, and we're lucky to have him here. He does amazing work. So, well, there it is. Those are your favorite shows of the year, Dan, and people can read all about it at Hollywood Reporter and check you out at Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Dan, it went by really quickly this time, as it always does, but we will talk to you again in the new year, and have a happy new year, Dan, and we'll talk to you in January.
Same to you and yours, Nick.
Okay. Take care, Dan. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. All right, we're going to take a break for the news here on 720 WGN. Well, this song has caused a lot of controversy this year, hasn't it, Dan?
Very much so.
I've always talked about how creepy this song is. Now everybody's talking about it. Alan in North Carolina, Leon Redbone and Zooey Deschanel. I never heard that before. I never heard that version before. Baby, It's Cold Outside. Leon Redbone. One of the most original voices ever, that guy. So, hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. It's Triple Play Third. Does that mean we're going to hear three songs by Leon Redbone and Zooey Deschanel?
Just Leon.
Oh, just Leon. Okay. All right, cool. I didn't know that. I was going to say, what, they do a whole album together? So, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. And it's Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich, always off. Steve Grzanich is off through the holidays. He'll be back in the new year, but the opening bell will continue at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6. And I will join Steve Cochran and the gang at 6:20 for my weekly Thursday visit. We'll have some fun before the end of the new year. Well, end of the new year. The end of the old year and the beginning of the new year. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to jump into one of my favorite topics that we talk about annually during the holidays. What's your favorite Christmas movie? Are there weird ones that you watch? Are there ones that you watch every single year, your favorite Christmas movies of all time? And we'll get into that conversation right now. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Phone lines and text lines are open for your thoughts on the best, most memorable, weirdest Christmas movies ever. So, yeah, let's get into that here on WGN. Hey, by the way, reminder that I am hosting a screening this Saturday night of the new Robert Zemeckis movie, Welcome to Marwen. And it's at 7:10 at the AMC Rosemont 18. That's formerly Music Movico. I'll be hosting the screening of the brand new movie with Steve Carell. I really loved it. I thought it was great. I can't wait to see it again. Patty Vasquez is going to be there. Vic Vaughn is going to be there. We'll celebrate the holidays together and watch a brand new movie on the big screen, as part of a bonus Nick D Film Club event. So we're doing it this Saturday, the 22nd, 7:10 showing at, the AMC Rosemont 18. Reserve your seats now. Go to amctheaters.com. Get to the 7:10 showing at the AMC Rosemont 18. Reserve your seats. They'll be waiting for you Saturday night. I'll introduce the movie. We'll watch the brand new Robert Zemeckis movie, a great movie called Welcome to Marwen. And then we'll talk about it afterwards. A special Saturday night version, a brand new movie version of the Nick DiGiglio Film Club. And then our regular film club meeting is Tuesday, January 8th. And that will be the classic hockey movie, one of the funniest movies ever made, one of the best movies of the 70s, Slapshot, with Paul Newman and Michael Ondaatje, Lindsay Krause, Melinda Dillon, Jerry Hauser, Strother Martin. It is a classic movie, the best movie, best hockey movie ever made, and one of the funniest movies of all time. And we're going to see it on the big screen, digitally remastered. If you've never seen Slapshot, you should come out and see it because it's a riot. If you've only seen it on the small screen, come on out and see it digitally remastered on the big screen with the great sound and all that cool stuff. One of my favorite movies ever, one of the funniest ever. That's Tuesday, January 8th. Again, go to amctheaters.com to reserve your seats for Slapshot. That begins at 8 o'clock. I'll introduce the movie. We'll talk about it afterwards and hang out and watch one of the funniest movies ever made on the big screen. And that one is on Tuesday, January 8th, also at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movico, with our screening of Slapshot. All right. So a couple of fun Nick DiGiglio Film Club events coming up, and we hope to see you out there at Rosemont for the fun. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we are talking about, as we do every year, what are your favorite Christmas movies? Which ones do you watch every year? And even if they're offbeat or weird or any of that kind of stuff, which ones jump into your head? Dan, do you have one or two favorites that are perennials for you? Or
I will give you the collective Halloween, or excuse me, Hallmark holiday movies.
You know, here's the thing. You know how they've increased production every year?
Yes.
On the Hallmark? Well, you know, because you're married to someone who loves the Hallmark holiday movies. They made 26 or 27 last year, 48 this year.
Yeah. I believe they started after Halloween. So it has been on the air. I think they did throw in some Thanksgiving-related films.
Ah, they did.
But
you know, what's funny, Jimmy Kimmel did a thing where he took all of those new movies and combined them into one and did like a trailer for it. And, you know, some of the cast members are crazy. I was wondering where Christy Swanson went.
Yes. I mean, they definitely bring out a lot of people like, oh, there that person
yeah,
is.
Yeah, Chad Michael Murray. Is in a few of them.
Yep.
I was like, wow, look at that's where they are now. That's where these people are. They're on Hallmark. They're doing the holiday stuff. Good for them.
Yep.
That's cool. All right, so you're saying the collective Hallmark movies.
The Hallmark movies. Okay. You know what you're getting, and it's like comfort food. It's just nice. And
now you don't. You think Eileen is listening?
Hopefully not,
because she's got to work in the morning.
Right.
So did you see that they have an exclusive? This is my Hallmark blanket that I. Have you seen this?
No, I have not.
It's a blanket that you're supposed to have over your legs on the couch, and it has the Hallmark. It says, "This is my Hallmark holiday movie watching blanket."
Oh my goodness!
And it's got the Hallmark logo on it and everything, and it's red, and the picture, of course, is a woman on a couch snuggling underneath her Hallmark blanket to watch her Hallmark movies.
There you go. Yeah. That's very appropriate.
Yeah, very cool. Well, all right, what are some of your other ones now?
I know John's going to steal one of my my other ones that I came up, so I'll let him go to bat for me on that one. So.
All right, cool. Vic, do you have any favorite Christmas movies that you watch? Anything that stands out for you?
Yeah, A Christmas Carol, and really just about any version will do, because we go see the Goodman Theater's production of A Christmas Carol every year as a tradition.
Holiday tradition,
And then also The Family Stone. I love that movie.
Oh, you do?
Love that movie. Okay. Yeah, I love that family dynamic that they created in that film.
Okay, Family Stone.
Makes me feel all warm inside. And then also A Christmas Story. I love that one.
Well, Christmas Story is it's on TNT and TBS. You know, as we all know, there's 24 hours it's on, and it's always on in my apartment. Like if I'm just doing something or wrapping a gift or just like reading or just laying on the couch, it's like comfort food. You know what I mean? It's like just on in the background, and then every once in a while I'll pay attention to it when my favorite scenes come on. But you know, for that 24 hours, it's usually on in my apartment, and I love that movie. I really do.
Same here.
Here's what they say about this is out of Esquire magazine. They actually write about the Family Stone, Vic.
Oh, good.
Here's what they say. They say it's an all-star cast: Sarah Jessica Parker, Claire Danes, Rachel McAdams, Luke Wilson, and Diane Keaton. And that list is leaving some reasonable star power out. If you've ever been part of a family or even known one who was hostile to outsiders, you'll understand where the Stone family is coming from. What starts as a tense family comedy about kicking Sarah Jessica Parker out of the family takes a serious, heartfelt twist by the end. So they like it.
It's so good. There's people in that movie that remind me of certain family members that I have, I love it.
Well, that's part of what's great about some of these movies is you can see yourself or your family in what you're watching. That makes you endear yourself to it more. It endears itself to you more because of that.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right, that's what we're talking about. We're going to take a break here for weather, and then we come back, I'll jump right to the phones and the texts and tell you my favorites, Christmas movies. What are your favorite Christmas movies of all time, and which ones do you watch yearly? 312-981-7200. It's time for that annual conversation that we're having here on the show and having some fun talking about our favorite Christmas movies. But let's break here first for some weather. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Alan in North Carolina recommending or requesting Leon Redbone with "There's No Place Like Home for the Holidays." Dan, you're a little bit more familiar with Friends than I am. There's a Christmas episode on right now, and for some reason, Schwimmer's dressed up like an armadillo.
The Christmas armadillo.
What's the?
I forget the backstory on it. I believe perhaps something involving Santa had been spoiled for the young Geller children, and the armadillo was there to help.
They were
out of Santa costume, and the armadillo was the only thing left at the store.
I'm just a little confused. That's all. I was just David Schwimmer walking around dressed up like an armadillo. Because they show Friends, by the way, at least three times during my show on the overnights, and I always have one of the monitors is on channel 9, two of the monitors actually in the room or on the studio are on channel 9, so that we're all ready at 4 o'clock to keep an eye on what's happening on the WGN morning news here on channel 9. Whew. All right. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We're talking about our favorite Christmas movies. So many of them to choose from, so many different types. What are the ones that you watch every year? Which ones do you love? 312-981-7200. Here's Mark the Breadman on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
All right. Our favorite holiday movie we watch every year as a family is The Polar Express.
Ah, speaking of Robert Zemeckis. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And as an added bonus, I'm taking my daughter Saoirse and I to California on a train Sunday.
Oh, is that right?
So we're going to be watching that probably a few times to keep her busy.
There you go. Very cool. Very cool. Have a fun trip.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
All right, take care. There's Mark. Daughter's name is Saoirse. All right. Let's see. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing, Nick?
All right. What do you got?
Best two for me is White Christmas and Holiday Inn.
Classics. Both of them are classics. Dan, which was the one that out of those two?
White Christmas. I actually saw it for the first time last year. So.
No! Yeah. Wow! That's awesome! What, so you did you just decide I'm going
to
watch
just,
this one?
I just never got around to it, and it finally worked out that it was on, you know, whatever day, and we were watching the TV together. So
yeah. It's a great movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some classic songs in that one as well. Holiday Inn is a great one too. Those are both full on classic Christmas movies. No question about it. All right, John, take care.
All right, Nick.
Yeah. There we go. Here's Mary Jane on WGN. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi, and Merry Christmas to you. Cindy. And thank you for being on and having such a good show in the middle of the night when I can't sleep.
Oh, I appreciate that, Mary Jane. That's what I'm here for.
But my favorite movie, I like the old classics like Holiday Inn and White Christmas, but It Happened on Fifth Avenue is my absolute favorite, best movie ever.
So
a lot of people don't know about it, but movie.
Tell everybody about it then.
Well, it's about this little homeless guy who lives on Park Avenue during the winter, and when the people in all those beautiful mansions go to warm places during the winter, he sneaks into their house, and especially one he loves there. And the story goes on where this veteran ends up on a park bench. And he takes him in, and then it is really so cute. And then the owner comes home suddenly, and he pretends like he's homeless also, and it's really cute then.
There you go. So that's happened.
No, it's really cute.
It happened on Fifth Avenue. All right, there you go.
Right.
All right, Mary Jane, thanks very much.
Merry Christmas
you
again.
Too. Take care. All right, here's Constance on WGN. Hi, Constance.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, hello.
Hello? Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, I would like to mention The Sound of Music.
Ah, yes, a perennial favorite, The Sound of Music. Yes.
Oh, yes, of course. My father's been deceased now for 20 years this year. God rest his soul, but we used to sit there every year, and I just watched it this week. I think it was last Saturday or one of the days.
Yeah.
It's just so exciting. I mean, it's a true story.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure why they play it at Christmas. We never did know. But, I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful movie. And Plummer, I can't think of his first name.
Christopher
Plummer. Yeah. And, of course, you've got
Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews.
Right, yeah, that's a classic. The Sound of Music is indeed a classic. Lots of people watch it around the holidays. No question about it. Constance, thanks. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I'll give you a few of my favorites. I like the kind of unusual stuff, which I'm sure people are shocked by. Now, the classics, you know, I mean, I love them. I like White Christmas is great, and somebody mentioned Holiday Inn. We talked about A Christmas Story. And, you know, all the regular ones are great. The version of A Christmas Carol, two of my favorite versions of that are, I think the best is Alistair Sim's version of A Christmas Carol. And then I really love the George C. Scott version. And I just showed Scrooge a few weeks ago at my film club, and had a bunch of people out for that, and that's a really fun and weird version of Christmas Carol as well. But the ones that are on the top of my list that I watch every year, The Ref is my favorite Christmas movie of all time. I love that movie, and I watch it every year. I even watch it when it's not Christmas time, and I just adore it. It's Dennis Leary, Kevin Spacey, Judy Davis. It is really funny and really biting, and then ultimately really sweet. It's my favorite Christmas movie ever. Touchstone Disney Corporation released that movie, and they thought it would be a real smart move to release it in April. So when that movie came out in 1994, it came out in April. Now, why they didn't release it during Christmas or the holidays makes no sense to me. They did a terrible advertising campaign for it. It's got a weird name, like The Ref. I mean, you kind of don't know what to make of it because it is a pretty strange name. So it was kind of doomed from the beginning with a weird name and a terrible ad campaign and a terrible time to release it. But if you've never seen The Ref, It is a fantastic Christmas movie and at the top of my list of movies that I watch every year at Christmas time. So I highly recommend The Ref with Dennis Leary. It's one of my favorite movies in general and my favorite Christmas movie of all time. All right, let's take a break here. We got the news, and after the news, we'll jump back into the phone calls and the texts with your favorite Christmas movies. 312-981-7200, Alan in North Carolina, requesting some Leon Redbone with Blue Christmas. And it's Nick DiGilio here. How are you? We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m., and it's Thursday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking about your favorite Christmas movies. Which movies do you watch at Christmas? Do you have like an annual movie that you must watch? What are your favorites? Maybe some of the weirdest. And we got a whole bunch of texts. Before we get to the text, here's Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hi. I was just watched it again for the umpteenth time. It was A Pocket Full of Miracles.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, with Bette Davis and Glenn Ford and every character actor in Hollywood pretty much in
it. Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. It doesn't get much praise, but it's definitely worth seeing.
And then I was also thinking of A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. which has a lot of Christmas scenes in it.
It does have a lot of Christmas scenes in it. That was
including the mean old Christmas tree salesman who keeps on trying to knock the kids over.
Right. That's right.
To catch the free Christmas tree. The only way they can get a true tree is to catch it.
All right. Thanks, Donald.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care. We got a bunch of texts here. 763 area code says the Mr. Magoo version of Christmas Carol. They watch that every year. Lisa in Brookfield says we always watch the original Christmas in Connecticut. Of course, the black and white original Miracle on 34th Street. Love your show. Merry Christmas. Thank you, Lisa. Megan says every year I watch A Muppet Christmas Carol. It's my favorite Christmas film since I was a kid. And I usually watch Elf and all the TV specials like How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Charlie Brown, and Rudolph. 773 area code says I like The Bishop's Wife with David Niven, Loretta Young, and Cary Grant. I like a cheesy holiday film, Say One for Me, with Robert Wagner, Debbie Reynolds, and Bing Crosby. Dino says Arthur Christmas. 301 Erica says Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim and A Christmas Carol with George C. Scott. Those are my two favorites that I just mentioned. All right. And then School Bus Driver Bill says The Christmas Chronicles with Kurt Russell on Netflix. Okay, that was. But Dan, have I talked to you about that yet?
I just saw your post about it. We haven't talked about it.
It's great. It's Kurt Russell is Santa. I mean, how is that not one of the greatest things that could ever exist in the world? Kurt Russell as Santa. It's called The Christmas Chronicles. It is currently available on Netflix. It's new. They put it up like right around Thanksgiving. And it's fantastic. And it's, I mean, I'm in. All I have to say is Kurt Russell as Santa. That's it. Why wouldn't everybody on the planet watch it? And then, of course, Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin, says Die Hard. Now, why has this argument started big time, Dan, the past couple of years, as to whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie? Hasn't that been like, this has been like, it's really amped up the past few years.
Yes, it has, very much so.
I think Die Hard's a Christmas movie. I watch it at Christmas. It takes place at Christmas, during a Christmas party, at Christmas time. Die Hard's a Christmas movie. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, it checks the criteria.
Yeah. It's a Christmas movie.
It's heartwarming.
It is. Ho, ho, ho.
Family.
Now I have a machine gun. I mean, come on. And they play Run DMC. They play, you know. I mean, come on. What are we talking about? And you know what doesn't ever get mentioned? Die Hard 2. Die Hard 2 takes place on Christmas. And that's a Christmas movie. So you could watch the first two Die Hard movies back to back and watch two great Christmas movies. And Die Hard 2 is one of the greatest action movies ever made. And I know I'm in the minority on this. I think Die Hard 2 is the best of the series. And I love Die Hard. The original Die Hard is an absolute classic. It is genius and it is awesome. But I think Die Hard 2 is a better movie. So, yeah. So, yeah, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, there shouldn't even be an argument. Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and add Die Hard 2 to your list as well. I love Gremlins. I think Gremlins is a great Christmas movie, although that movie came out in the summer. It did come out in the summer, but Gremlins is a Christmas movie. I showed that at my film club 1 year for Christmas, like a few years back. Yeah, so there you go. All right, here's another one that I always mentioned that I always mention, The Ice Harvest. This is like way up. I watch this one every year, too. This is John Cusack, Billy Bob Thornton, Connie Nielsen, Randy Quaid. Directed by the great Harold Ramis, one of the most perfect screenplays ever written. A fantastic Christmas movie about a couple of guys attempting to steal a bunch of money from a mobster, and they can't get out of town because an ice storm has them trapped in Wichita Falls. Shot here in Illinois locally, features some local talent. It's a movie that completely tanked at the box office, but I never, you know, I never miss watching Ice Harvest every year. Oh, and Oliver Platt. Oh, God, Oliver Platt is so good in it. So yeah, I always mention The Ice Harvest. The Ref and The Ice Harvest are kind of like a double feature for me, usually on Christmas Eve. I usually watch those back to back, The Ref and The Ice Harvest. You know what's a good one, Dan?
What's that?
That you can watch throughout the entire holiday season, starting with Thanksgiving all the way through New Year's? Trading Places.
There you go.
Trading Places takes place during Thanksgiving. There are scenes that take place during Thanksgiving and Christmas, and of course the big climax on New Year's Eve on the train, and then leaving, you know, and then the first day of business back at the World Trade Center. So whatever, I mean, you could watch that. You could just have that in your DVD player from November through January, and it's appropriate to watch at all times. The scene where Dan Aykroyd is drunk and he's in that filthy, disgusting Santa suit, and he's on the bus eating that giant piece of salmon through his fake beard. That image alone right there is an, and he's just like growling. So Trading Places covers all the holidays. So those are some of my favorites. What do you guys think? 312-981-7200. Here are some of the choices. You ever see One Magic Christmas?
I have not.
1984 or 85? 85. It's Mary Steenburgen, and it's a... people, when it came out, it didn't do very well at the box office because it's a little bit on the depressing side. But Harry Dean Stanton plays an angel in it. So right there, it's like, oh, that's great casting because Harry Dean Stanton was an angel. So Harry Dean Stanton plays an angel, and he's looking over this family that's really struggling during the Christmas time and helps them out. And Mary Steenburgen is in it. It's got a little It's a Wonderful Life in it. And it was a pretty big failure when it came out in the theaters. I remember seeing the screening. They screened it for us. I saw it. Roy Leonard and I sat next to each other and watched it, and we both really enjoyed it. We both really liked it and gave it a pretty solid review when it came out. But I remember people thought it was too depressing and they thought it was too dark. And so it didn't do very well. But yeah. Let's see. What are some of the other ones that we've mentioned here? Office Christmas Party. What are you kidding me? Office Christmas Party is mentioned in this article. T.J. Miller and Jennifer Aniston play feuding siblings who have different perspectives on how to run the company they inherited. Tasked with winning the business of a high-stakes client, T.J. Miller's Clay sets out to throw the Office Christmas Party to end all Christmas parties, and an event so debauched that it may end the company, too. Yeah, see, now that's not a good movie, Office Christmas Party, despite the fact that there are amazingly funny people in it. Jason Bateman is in it. Kate McKinnon is in it. Courtney B. Vance is in it. But it's not. I didn't think it was very good. But they include it here. Apparently, the people at Esquire magazine enjoyed Office Christmas Party. Not one of my favorites. Not one that I would recommend. So, what about you guys? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're having our annual fun conversation about your favorite, the weirdest, the ones that you watch every single year, your Christmas favorite Christmas movies. 312-981-7200. We'll get back to it after we take a break here for the weather and some commercials. Welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday here, and Peter in Decatur gets the last one for the year. The last Triple Play Thursday of the year, Dan.
That's right.
And it belongs to Peter in Decatur. Joan Baez, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. I don't know, a lot of people know this. It was written for Rahm. I'm not sure that not sure that people know that or not. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and Merry Christmas to everybody. And we're talking Christmas movies this morning because tomorrow we're gonna have just a jam packed show because Jeff Tuckman is gonna be here tomorrow morning for his monthly visit. We've got this unbelievable DVD package of the Three Stooges that we're gonna be giving away. Plus, we'll answer any and all of your movie and DVD related questions. I can't think of the title of a movie. It's making you crazy. Describe it to us. If I can't get it, Jeff can't get it. I know a lot of the listeners will. But we always have a lot of fun with Jeff. He'll be in tomorrow. And then after Jeff leaves at 2 a.m., the lovely Esmeralda Leon will be joining us. And we'll have some fun doing some of the regular stuff that we've done with Esmeralda in the past. And then just celebrating the holidays and talking holiday stuff with Esmeralda. So it's going to be a fun show tomorrow. The last show of the last show of 2018. We'll be back at the beginning of January. So we're going to have some fun. Jeff Tuckman, Esmeralda Leon tomorrow. So I thought we'd talk about favorite Christmas movies this morning. So let's talk with Brian on WGN. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Brother Nate. Good morning.
Hey.
My favorite movie is The Ref with Dennis Leary. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so great. One time at Christmas, my mother-in-law, she's a piece of work, and I used that line from the movie Kevin Spacey used when he finally snaps at his mom.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm going to get you a ladder, so next time you feel unappreciated, you can climb your fat ass up on that cross and nail yourself to it.
The thing about that movie is that it is, I mean, essentially what it is it's a burglar, a cat burglar played by Dennis Leary is on the lam because there's an APA looking out for him. They're looking for him. APB looking for him. And so he kidnaps a couple and is going to lay low in their house until the search is over and he can get out of town. But he makes the mistake of kidnapping the most dysfunctional married couple of all time who are expecting the most annoying in-laws to show up. Their kid is a criminal. It is unbelievably funny and really, you know, a lot of people can identify with it because it's so dysfunctional. And I got to tell you, Brian, particularly because everybody is great in that movie, everybody. But I got to say, I think Judy Davis is spectacularly funny in that movie, and you know
she was very funny.
Yeah, it's my favorite Christmas movie, Brian.
It is.
Yeah,
mine too.
Okay, buddy, take care. Have a good one.
Hey, you too.
All right, just the image. You've seen The Ref, right, Dan?
Yeah, well, a long time ago.
Just the image of them wearing those stupid candles around their head. I mean, just that alone. Judy Davis is so good in it. Oh, God, I love that movie. 773 area code says, Scrooged or How the Grinch Stole Christmas. 815 area code says, We're No Angels with Humphrey Bogart, Aldo Ray, and Peter Ustinov. It's great. Yeah, it's you get the original version, not the version with Sean Penn and Robert De Niro. 630 area code says, I prefer the Christmas Carol with Reginald Owen. And then I also like to watch It's a Wonderful Life. My Christmas doesn't begin until I see those two. All right, let's go back to the phones. Here's Greg on WGN. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how about Bad Santa?
Yeah, I hate that movie, but
oh.
I do. I know I'm in the minority. Everybody loves Bad Santa, and so do you watch it every year?
Yep.
You're in the majority. I'm in the minority on that one, but I can't stand Bad Santa. I hate it. Miriam, by the way, sent in a text, agrees with Greg. Bad Santa, they watch it every year. That's the Billy Bob Thornton movie. They made a sequel to that one, Bad Santa 2, which I actually think is better than the first one. Because the first one, to me, I just couldn't get into it. I thought it was really mean-spirited and not funny at all. I mean, and listen, I like black comedies. I like tasteless humor. I'm all for it. I don't think there should be any kind of boundaries on the kind of humor that people do, and I think everybody should be a target. And I don't mind mean comedy. I don't mind black comedy. But, man, it was mean-spirited and not funny. The first 5 minutes is funny. Like, the opening credits for Bad Santa, I think, is hilarious. But, It's just not my it's not my cup of tea. I just thought it was really mean and just not funny. And I know I'm in the minority. Most people love Bad Santa. You know what's weird about that, Dan?
What's that?
Is have you seen Bad Santa?
I have not.
And also, what's weird about it? Lauren Graham's in it, and I don't like it. You know, how does that happen? How does Lauren Graham star in something and me not love it? I don't understand how that, you know, Lorelai. It's Lorelai Gilmore. How am I going to, what? But the weird thing about it is that the majority of the people in the world love Bad Santa. They think it's hilarious, and when it came out, it was a big hit. And since it came out, there are people, you know, like Greg and Miriam, who love it and laugh at it and watch it every year. The only three people, the only other two people that I know that hate Bad Santa are Eric and Colin. It's like it's really strange. You know, the three of us review movies together. We've been doing it for years, and we're the only three people I think on the planet that hate it, and we all three of us hate it, which is really strange, I think, because the odds on that happening are not huge. Or are huge. Not happening? Not huge. Right. You know, Greg, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. My favorite Batman movie is a great Christmas movie. That's Batman Returns, which is by far my favorite Batman movie of all of them. I'm including the Christopher Nolan stuff. I'm including all the crap that's being made now from the DC universe that sucks. But my favorite Batman movie ever is Batman Returns. And yeah, it says, sure, it's kind of an action movie that isn't really about Christmas, despite being set during the holiday season. Tim Burton's second chance at a Batman film had all the trimmings of his similarly gothy Christmas tale, A Nightmare Before Christmas. Only this one is more violent, dangerous, and sexy. And yeah, Batman Returns is my favorite Batman movie, and features one of my favorite performances ever, and that's Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman. I think Michelle Pfeiffer is the best Catwoman ever. You know, I really do, and I think that performance is great. And it's a great Christmas movie. It's very moody. The problem that people have with that movie, and Dan, I think you have a problem with it, is that it's much more of a Tim Burton movie than it is a Batman movie.
I can see that.
You know, I mean, it really has much. It feels much more like a Tim Burton, especially other than the first one. The first one that he made, Batman in '89 with Michael Keaton, that was not as Tim Burton-y. But then he went right down the Tim Burton road with Batman Returns. I mean, right down it. And that performance by Michelle Pfeiffer, man, she's spectacular in that movie. And that's another one that I watch every year, Batman Returns. I watch that every year at Christmas. I like it more than Nightmare Before Christmas, which, by the way, he didn't direct. I always have to make this clear. And that's a movie that you can watch either at Halloween or at Christmas, and it works both ways. Tim Burton didn't direct that movie. Henry Selick directed that movie. It says Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas. He wrote it. It was his idea. But Henry Selick directed that movie. He needs to get, you know, every time that movie is mentioned, someone needs to mention Henry Selick's name. Because if you love that movie, it's Henry Selick who directed it, not Tim Burton. So, all right, real quick before we break, here's Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth. Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right. What do you got?
Christmas in Connecticut with Barbara Stanwyck. Dennis Moore. I loved his voice.
Yeah. That's a classic.
Yeah. You mean you really saw it?
Yeah, of course I saw it, Elizabeth. What do you?
Well, you're not that old.
No, you don't have to be old to see old movies.
I guess not.
Oh, okay, Elizabeth.
Tastes change.
Thanks. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Merry Christmas, Carol.
You too. There you go. Christmas in Connecticut. Yeah, it's a classic. All right. News is up next, and then we'll jump back into this.
Herod the king in his raging charged he hath this day his men of might in his own sight.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! 312-981-7200 and Peter and Decatur with Joan Baez and the Coventry Carol. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We are talking about the best and your favorite Christmas movies of all time. Maybe some of the more unusual ones or the weirder ones. We would love to hear from you and your thoughts on the ones that you watch every year. 312-981-7200. Now, in this next one that I'm going to mention, I would personally like to thank Colin Suter for turning me on to this movie. It is truly one of the weirdest movies ever made. It's called Christmas Evil. Okay? And the original title, they changed it to Christmas Evil. The original title was You Better Watch Out. That was the original title. Now, there have been horror movies that have taken place on Christmas. You've got the whole Silent Night, Deadly Night series. There's like six of those. And you have the original Black Christmas from 1974, which is one of the best horror movies of all time, and then the stupid remake of Black Christmas. So there have been other Christmas movies and some other low-budget ones. And Black Christmas is actually one of the best, you know, one of the best of all time. If you've not seen Black Christmas, Margot Kidder, one of her first movies, Andrea Martin is in it, Olivia Hussey, Keir Dulley, the great John Saxon, please, John Saxon, the king. And it is a really scary movie, really creepy, really beautifully made, directed by Bob Clark, who also directed A Christmas Story. So he directed two great Christmas movies that could not be more different, one of them being a very, very creepy slasher movie. So I love Black Christmas. That's like way high on my list of movies that I watch during Christmas time as well. But this Christmas Evil movie is really, truly one of the most bizarre and weird things I've ever seen, and compellingly insane to watch. It's about a toy factory worker who was traumatized as a young kid and is made fun of and then dresses up like Santa Claus, thinks he really is Santa Claus, and then goes on a killing spree and just starts killing people. So it's called Christmas Evil, and it is truly an insane movie. I mean, absolutely insane. And kind of fascinating. And Joe Bob Briggs does the one of the commentaries. There's a few commentaries. I actually went out and bought this movie based on Colin Suter's recommendation on how absolutely off the wall this thing is. So I got the like deluxe edition, which has a whole bunch of extras. This is a low budget, insane horror movie from 1980 that no one really knew about, you know. But it's become sort of a cult classic. And Joe Bob Briggs does one of the commentaries on it. It's pretty fascinating. So here's one of the things about this movie, Dan, that adds to the weirdness of it. Like, in general, it's crazy. The style of it is way over the top and weird, and he works at a big toy factory, and it's played very seriously. It's a crazy movie that's played really, really, you know, sincerely. The lead actor in the movie, the guy who plays the guy who goes nuts, thinks he's Santa and starts killing people, is a guy named Brandon Maggart. Brandon Maggart. Now, do you know who he's the father of?
No clue.
Fiona Apple. So Fiona, that adds another element of insanity to this movie. Watching this movie, you're like, that's Fiona Apple's father doing this. It's an oddity, to say the least, to say the very least. It's a very strange movie. Colin turned me on to it, and I picked up the DVD, I think it was 3 years ago. And I watch it every year, and it is truly, I mean, it's like hypnotically weird. And he's crazy in it, Fiona Apple's dad. So it's called Christmas Evil, and that's one that I recommend. But that's, you know, this is not a regular movie. Like I said, it's you want to take a crazy risk on a weird, insane horror movie featuring Fiona Apple's dad as a guy dressed up like Santa Claus killing people. Christmas Evil is for you. A bunch of texts just came in. 773 area code says, my top six are, number one, The Homecoming, A Christmas Story. Number two, A Christmas Visitor. Number three, Christmas Vacation. Number four, Miracle on 34th Street. Number five, Home Alone. Number six, The Brady Bunch Christmas Movie. Home Alone is another one that I hate. I hate that movie. I hate Home Alone. You know, in the same way that I hate Bad Santa, I think Home Alone's a really mean movie. You know, what's supposed to be what's supposed to be slapstick comes off as just pain. There's a weird sort of child abuse feel to it. I can't stand Home Alone. I hate that movie. 847 area code, Jingle All the Way. Who knew Arnold Schwarzenegger could be heartwarming? I beg to disagree on that one. I think I beg to differ on that one, Jingle All the Way. It's not, it's not good. Him and Sinbad. 312 area code, is Lethal Weapon a Christmas movie? Yes, Lethal Weapon is a Christmas movie. Yes, it is. All the arguments about whether Die Hard and Lethal Weapon are Christmas movies, there's no argument. They're Christmas movies. Lethal Weapon is indeed a Christmas movie. You know what else is a Christmas movie? Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang is a Christmas movie. And a great one. You've seen Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, right, Dan?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man. It's got Valley Kilmer's. It's got Airborne is in it. And that was the beginning, as far as I'm concerned. Everybody talks about Iron Man and Tropic Thunder being like the big comeback for Robert Downey Jr., and that's true, because 2008 was a massive year for him. Oscar nomination for Tropic Thunder, which was a box office hit. Iron Man goes without saying what that did for his career. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, to me, was step one in the comeback of RD Squared. That's what I'm saying. I love Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. Great movie. Also a Christmas movie. 414 area code says, Holiday Affair with Robert Mitchum and Janet Leigh. Oh, man, I haven't seen that one in years. 615 area code says, one of my favorites is The Waltons' Homecoming. I think it was the first Waltons. Yeah, I think they still show that one. Every year, I mean, I think at least one, two cable stations show The Waltons. That's a really famous TV movie, too. That's one of those really beloved TV movies, and I think that did start the Waltons. I think that's what that movie was so popular. The Christmas Homecoming Walton thing was so popular that they decided to make a series out of it, and that's how it started. And then the Waltons, of course, one of the biggest shows of the '70s and eighties. Here's Tony on WGN. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Nick. What's going on?
What's going on?
Hey, I had three for you, man. Three. Okay. The first one. The Fat Albert Christmas special.
I have to say, man, you know what? Is that available? Is that out there somewhere?
It's out there. I mean, I got one. It's an old copy, though, but yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's still floating around there somewhere, if you're looking for it.
All right, cool.
And the other one, I Come in Peace with Dolph Lundgren. That one was fed during Christmas.
Wait a second. That movie took place at Christmas?
Yes, I mean, it was shot in Texas, Houston, Texas, of course, but yeah, it was set during the holidays.
I didn't know that. I've only seen it the one time, and I just remember the one thing I remember about that movie was that Dolph Lundgren says, "You come in peace, you go in pieces, you go in pieces."
Right.
That's what I remember from the movie. I forgot completely that it took place during the holidays. That's pretty awesome.
Right, and of course, this version of Scrooge, this one was the one with Reginald Owen.
Yeah, oh, that was a good, yeah, that everybody has their, I think everybody has their personal favorite version of A Christmas Carol. You know what I mean? I think, you know, some people, I'm an Alistair Sims guy.
Alistair Sims, I like that one, but I mean, I just had to throw that Reginald Owen out there, too.
It's a great one.
That was a good one, too.
Yeah, it's a good one, you're right. All right, Tony, have a good holiday, buddy.
You too, man.
Take care. 312-981-7200 is a phone number. Here's one that's become an annual favorite for a lot of people, Dan. Love Actually. Do you know a lot of people who watch that one?
What's that?
Love Actually. Do you know a lot of people who watch that one?
Yeah, we've been watching the last couple of
days. Oh, you've been watching it too?
Yeah, I hate it. So
you hate it?
I hate that movie.
Wait, why do you hate it?
I think it's just the dumb. I mean, like obviously there are some good, some stories are better than others, but just the ones I dislike, I despise.
Yeah. There are things about that movie that I like, and certain performances. I think it's too long, but I know a lot of people who adore that movie. The people who like Love Actually really, really, really like Love Actually. Wait a minute, hold on. Mary is in traffic. Go ahead, Mary.
That is my favorite Christmas movie. I'm so sorry, Dan.
It's fine. I mean, obviously, Eileen's been watching it like on and off for the last 4 days, so she enjoys it.
Yeah, but you can't keep watching it forever. But yeah, the whole thing with the porn stars, I don't like that part, really. It's kind of dumb. But yeah, it is kind of long.
That was my only real complaint with it. You know what is one of the most satirized scenes in that movie is the dude on the porch. I can't even remember who the actor is with the signs.
Oh, yeah, him. I don't like that either. Yeah.
With Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
With Keira Knightley and whoever the actor is. I can't remember. I've only seen the movie once. But yeah, they did a great SNL bit on that.
They did.
Oh yeah, they did a really hilarious satire of that a few years back. But yeah, no, I know Mary. I know a lot of people who watch Love Actually.
I mean, the end is just fantastic when he goes and proposes to the girl in the restaurant. I mean, come on.
Here's what they say about it, and Esquire magazine includes it too. They say Richard Curtis's star-studded ensemble romantic comedy is probably equally beloved and reviled. Well, there we go. We just proved that right here. Even if you're a hater, you can't deny the multi-narrative film's influence on holiday-centered comedies over the last decade. It's as cheesy of a Christmas movie as you can get on the big screen.
Cheesy?
Yeah.
That's not cheesy.
I think Dan would beg to differ on that one.
Oh. I would just say bad. But
just bad.
Oh, man. Now, I suppose you like Die Hard.
Oh, yeah. Die Hard rules.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, Die Hard. You ever see The Ref?
No, I've never seen The Ref. I have no idea what you're talking about. I heard you talking about this earlier. I'm like, The Ref?
Look it up. It's Dennis Leary, Judy Davis, Kevin Spacey. It is hilarious, and it's just great. It's my favorite Christmas movie ever.
Okay, I want to watch The Ref, and I want to watch Christmas Chronicles. That's my goal.
Okay, well, there you go. Kurt Russell is Santa. That's all you need.
I know.
That's all you need right there.
Right.
That was the description, you know, because Netflix sent a preview to me. And they were like, hey, you might be interested in this movie. And it said Kurt Russell as Santa Claus. And I went, no need to even convince me anymore.
No, Goldie's not in it, is she?
No, she's not.
Okay.
No.
It's an elf?
No, not as an elf, no. So Mary likes the old Love Actually. So, all right, cool.
It's not old, it's not cheesy.
All right. It's her favorite Christmas movie. What about you guys? What do you like? 312-981-7200. We got to take a break here for weather. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Coming up, the opening bell, and then Steve Cochran at 6. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Peter Indicator's Triple Play Thursday is closed out with Joan Baez doing Ave Maria. And we are talking about your favorite Christmas movies, the ones that you watch every year, some of the weird ones, or the most unusual ones, or the ones that the whole family enjoys. Here's one that the whole family would not enjoy. Eyes Wide Shut. Christmas movie? I mean, you're not going to sit down with the family and watch Eyes Wide Shut, Stanley Kubrick's last movie, which is a sort of this weird sexual adventure mystery with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. I think it's a brilliant movie, which has one of the funniest, like one of the most shockingly funny final lines in movie history. Like, I remember the movie, and there's this punchline. Nicole Kidman has this punchline at the end of the movie where I just busted out laughing after sitting through this movie, which is like 2.5 hours long. And she just has this fantastic punchline at the end of the film that every time I watch Eyes Wide Shut, it just completely cracks me up. And it's Kubrick's last movie. It's really hypnotic and weird and awesome, and I loved it. So but I do not recommend that for family viewing. It is not family viewing, trust me. It is as far from family viewing as you can possibly imagine. Adults only for Eyes Wide Shut. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning. Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Hey, so my movies are Die Hard, Grinch, and Charlie Brown. You always got to get a little Charlie Brown in there.
Yeah. Now, you're talking about the Grinch, the animated Grinch special, Boris Karloff, the original, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the one they did, I forgot who played it, but like the live-action one, that not was a big fan of that one. That was the original.
That was Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey played the Grinch in that one.
And then I also wanted to see if I could ruin a Christmas song for you that you played already.
Okay.
Coventry Carol. A lot of people have taken the lyrics out, but if you go back to the original lyrics, it talks about slaying children.
Wow. Oh, well, that's a very Christmassy thought right there.
Absolutely. Just wanted to ruin that one for you.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Yep, have a merry
Take
Christmas.
Care. You know, it's you know what I just realized? I totally forgot about this. Not only did Jim Carrey play the Grinch, but he also played Ebenezer Scrooge in Zemeckis' animated version of A Christmas Carol. I just totally forgot. I just put that two and two together right there. 312-981-7200. Hear about that? How about A Very Harold and Kumar Christmas? Dan, have you ever seen A Very Harold and Kumar Christmas?
I have not.
You know, my future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, is in that movie.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, you get to see her in 3D. Well, you did get to see her in 3D. So, yes, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo. We got to get her back on the show at some point. She's been bugging me to get back on the show. All right, what else do we have here? The Charlie Brown Christmas, do you know a lot of people get really depressed when they watch that? And if you think about it, it is pretty depressing. You know? And the same thing with, like, a lot of the Charlie Brown specials are just, like, because it's kind of, you know, they're kind of sort of sad sometimes. And, you know, there's always a very happy ending. But some there's, like, a stretch of stuff when you're watching Charlie Brown where you're like, man, this is depressing. So, let's see here. Now, Dan, were you a kid when Home Alone came out, right?
I was, yeah.
Did you see it when you were a kid?
No, I didn't.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Wow, you're not missing anything. What does everybody think of Elf? Will Ferrell. That's become a go-to now. They watch that people watch that one all the time. My ex-wife Heather loves that movie. Loves Elf. Watched it all the time during the holiday season. We got Meet Me in St. Louis. Let's see. Muppet Christmas Carol gets listed here. A Miracle on 34th Street. We were talking about that one with Matthew C. Hoffman, who hosted a screening of it. And we've got White Christmas, A Christmas Story, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And then, of course, I guess the classic, the one that everybody loves, is It's a Wonderful Life. Which is also depressing. It's amazing how some of these how some of these Christmas specials and movies are kind of depressing until the very end. Here's Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right.
I was going to say American Christmas Carol with Henry Winkler.
Oh yeah, that was made for TV. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's an animated one, The Snowman.
The Snowman?
Yeah, there's just music, and it's an animated thing about a kid building a snowman that comes to life.
Oh, okay. It's not Frosty? It's just a generic snowman?
No, it's about some writer that wrote this story about a snowman that comes to life. It's older. It's like from the 80s, I think.
Okay. All right, cool. All right,
Rich. Happy holiday, all right?
All right, take care, buddy. There you go. We got a couple more here. Rick says It's a Wonderful Life and Reindeer Games. No, come on, Reindeer Games with the Affleck. Come on, man. 815 area code says I love the Three Godfathers with John Wayne. 815 area code says and the 60630 area code says The Shopper on the Carler the Corner. Dolly Parton's Coat of Many Colors and Little Women all feature wonderful Christmas scenes. Tommy from Penn. By the way, you know that they've just completed a version of Little Women, a new version of Little Women? Greta Gerwig directing Saoirse as Joe? Come on! Tommy from Palatine says, my favorite Christmas movie was 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. It's a cartoon with mice. 801 area code says, the desk set with Spencer Tracy and Hepburn. I love watching their charisma and the fascinating look at America in the 50s. 816 area code said there wouldn't be Christmas unless Ernest saved Christmas with the great thespian Jim Varney. I've seen Ernest Save Christmas. 309 area code said the man who came to dinner, Betty Davis, Monty Woolley, Jimmy Durante, and a brawless Ann Sheridan. Thank you for that detail. A brawless Ann Sheridan. I know that's what I'm looking for when I want to see Christmas movies. I ask if Ann Sheridan is featured in it brawless. That gets me all the time. So, all right. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts on your favorite Christmas movies, and I hope to watch a bunch of them over the next few days. We'll take a break. When we come back, the news is up next, and then tomorrow we've got Esmeralda Leon coming back, and Jeff Tuckman will join us for our a special sort of holiday end-of-year show. All right, news is up after this.